welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, February the 3rd, 2015. I currently have 7 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by Councilmember Geddes, and our pledge will be given by Caden Roberts.
Mr. Geddes.
Our Father in Heaven, we are grateful this day to gather together as city leaders and residents and friends for the City Council meeting. We're grateful for this wonderful country that we live in and for the freedoms that we all enjoy. We're grateful for those that fight for and protect our rights and our freedoms. We ask thee that thou will be with us this evening, that we might discuss the issues before us in a reasonable manner and have good discussions and a successful meeting. We are thankful for all that we have and for the bounties of life, and we say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Caden?
I pledge allegiance.
Will the audience please rise?
Wait, what? Oh, please rise. Recite the Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Caden, and thank you, Scouts, all of you Scouts, for being here tonight, and your leaders as well. We appreciate that. So, next item is our approval of tonight's agenda. So, someone like to make a motion or amend the current one? I'll take that now.
Mayor, I would like to amend the agenda to place item number 10 after item number 5, as we have residents here for that.
Everything else say?
Yes.
Okay, I have a motion to move item 10 up to right after item number 5. Someone like to second that?
I'll second it.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item is public comments. And so each meeting we set apart some time for any resident that would like to speak on any topic that they would like. We have 3 minutes in which to do so. I picked up the sheet. Doesn't look like anyone had signed in to do that. So unless someone showed up late and is wanting to speak, no? Then I will close that part of the meeting and we'll move on to our consent agenda. So first item is the appointment of Mr. Pete Condor to the Cultural Arts Citizens Advisory Committee. Is Mr. Condor here this evening? He is not. Okay. And the other part of the consent agenda is the appointment of Mr. Philip Barker to the Board of Adjustment. I know Mr. Barker is here. Thank you for being here. So someone would like to make a motion to approve those two appointments. I'll take that.
I move that we approve the consent agenda for tonight.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you much. Moving on to city business.
Gary, can we do
his yes, we can. So, Mr. Barker, if you wouldn't mind standing, our city recorder, Colleen Mulvey, is going to read an oath to you. Okay. Thank you, Colleen. Thank you, Mr. Barker. Moving on. City business now. So we'll start with...
Oh, we moved it number 10 to up number 5.
Oh. Yes, we do. We need to move up item number 10, which is a discussion on the recommendation of the Beautification, Recreation, Parks, and Trails Citizen Advisory Committee regarding Bay Hill Park. Chandler, I think you're presenting on this, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what you have before you in your packet are two maps that I want to go over with you real fast. The Parks and Trails Committee has met over the last, I want to say, 4 or 5 months discussing Bay Hill Park, and the discussions have revolved around what was currently being proposed. There was an engineering estimate given to the city and what the residents in the area wanted. And we had some good discussions about what the vision of the park was and what the, I guess, what the ultimate idea of the park should be like. So, and you can see in your packet a map that was done by Civil Science a number of years ago, and the map shows the engineering layouts for the Bay Hill Park as it's currently what the current proposal is. The park has a small play area that's probably about 40 by 50 with a playground. There's probably, I don't even know how many parking stalls there are up here, probably about 25 parking stalls with the grass play area that is 40 by 90 feet, and there's a pavilion kind of down hidden off the path here next to a steep retaining wall. You can see that the Metro Water Easement, this blue section through this park, is an issue that we have discussed thoroughly. But the trail that runs along there, the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, comes into the park and then back onto and over the easement. Now, the Parks and Trails Committee, we had many discussions about what the residents of the area wanted and what they'd like to see in their park, and we have great members of our Parks and Trails Committee that went out into the community and solicited some feedback, and I feel like what the proposal is right now is serves a lot of those needs that the residents up there would like to see. So this crude rendering that we did shows what the Parks and Trails Committee has come up with. The main highlights are moving the play structures in the pavilion to be sort of adjacent together, so that parents that are having barbecues or family reunions or whatever are by where the children are playing. We also wanted to limit the number of crossings across that entrance drive-in, and we also wanted to increase the actual grass area that children could play on. Now, given the nature of the park itself, it's the topography of the park is difficult to work with because it's on a hillside. So there's a slope. There's a natural slope to it that makes it a little bit difficult to do things such as a soccer field. But we wanted to maximize the amount of grass that we could use. And so what you see here, and this map is it's kind of keyed. So let me just go through that real fast. Number one is the addition of a swing set, and we propose about 6 swings, and that would need a protective area of the swing set and a surrounding fall area of 32 by 47 feet. We propose moving the playground from being just right off the sidewalk and the road to being a little bit further into the park so that the swings are actually adjacent to the road. We also propose to move the pavilion from down further around the park up to kind of grade level, so it's near the swing set and near the play set. And one of the things I thought was a great idea was moving the trail onto the aqueduct easement. So it would max, right now you can see in the old proposal, the trail goes into the park and the grass area is a little square that's kind of inside the park but adjacent to the Metro Water Easement. By moving the trail onto the actual Metro Water Easement, we can maximize the amount of area that is dedicated for grass, play, soccer, whatever. And then certain areas of the park would stay native, and those are indicated by the fives on the map. 6 would be the addition of a couple parking stalls to make up for what was removed by moving the pavilion up to the next to the play areas. And then one item that's not on here that I wanted to quickly touch on was there was some concern from the Parks and Trails Committee that where there's currently a pump house and a bathroom across the way, across from the drive-in, adding a fence to kind of force kids to cross the road there at a crosswalk so that they're not just darting across the road there, so they'd have to actually go down to a crosswalk and then over and then back up to the bathroom. It sounds like a long way, but they could probably do it in the amount of time it took me to say that. But that is the current proposal that we have here. And We have a few members of the Parks and Trails Committee here tonight, so if they want to add something, I'd be more than happy to have them chime in. Are there any questions that I can answer at this time?
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
When I was on the committee, we were talking about moving the trail down into that metropolitan water district. Do you view that's going to be a problem getting their approval, or have you already gotten their approval to do that?
We haven't gotten their approval, but where the trail is actually currently on the easement throughout, the trail's on their easement all along their easement.
So it won't be a problem.
It shouldn't be a huge deal to put to move that, because really right now it's just a gravel road base running path. It's not really anything severe.
Wonderful.
So,
what's the surface of the new trail? Is it asphalt?
Parts of it would be asphalt, but no. The part that would be on the easement would probably just have to remain kind of a road base gravel.
Chandler, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I don't know if the committee has gotten this far yet. By the way, this is a great proposal. I like the changes of the committee quite a bit. I'm wondering if you've gotten far enough to be looking at playground equipment.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if the committee has thought about more innovative equipment than sort of a standard.
When you say innovative equipment, what do you mean?
I have a few pictures here that I can share with you later, but one of them is instead of putting in a traditional swing, which seats one child, they have large parabolic swings that actually can fit four kids at a time. They're really fun to sit on, and you can actually swing a group of kids at a time. And then there's also various kinds of climbing structures that are meshes of ropes all fit together so that you can actually have more active play.
I think those are great ideas, and those are I know what you're talking about. We've seen those in the catalogs that are provided to the city for playground equipment. And I think they're great ideas, but two of the things that the residents really, really wanted was one, swings, so that's what we've put in, and I think that your idea could easily go with that, what they want. And the second one was slides. That was another thing that they said that they really would like to see in their park. So those are kind of the traditional play areas, but there are, in the catalogs, there are those kind of netting that you can climb up. There's more innovative, more modern play areas that like what you're referring to. It's really just a matter of size. So, because you can see on the proposal, the area that's for the play set, right now it's being listed at, I think I write it on this, but it's close to what the swings have. It's about 32 by 47 feet, and that accommodates a play set that I believe it's about 40 kids. It's a bigger play set, but you have to add in what's called a soft fall zone, so that you can put in your rubber chips or your wood chips, so that when kids fall down the slide or fall off the rope, they have a soft landing. So the area that the playground takes needs to actually be bigger than the playground itself. So that we have to plan for that accordingly too, with our limited space where they want to put the playground. So, but yes, we have talked about some of those options.
I know that we have two members of the Parks and Trails Committee here, so I just wanted to, first of all, thank them. We've been talking about this for a long time when I was on the Parks and Trails Committee, and then it was taken over by someone else as well. So I appreciate this. I love this new plan. I think it does definitely encompass what the residents in that area are looking for. I know that for this fiscal year, we had budgeted an amount of money for phase one, but it looks like, from what I was told, it might make more sense to do it all at once. It makes it cheaper and easier to do, which I understand. And so I would just strongly encourage the council to please fully fund this in the next fiscal year. I've got several residents from the neighborhood I see came here tonight. I know they've been waiting for several years for this park. In 2009, there was actually a petition filed with the city that had over 100 signatures asking for this park. It's been a long time coming, and so I just really hope that the council will fully fund it and get it done for these residents.
Yeah, the reason, if I can just go into
why
we are proposing doing this in one phase rather than two, is the mobilization cost of getting people out here to do the grading, do the land work, and prepare the land is much cheaper when you pay them to do that once rather than twice. So we're trying to save costs and then probably use that money to put back into the park for added equipment, or it's more efficient to plan the park that way. So we think it'll actually lead to a better park too.
Right. And I know Melissa and Adrian are both here. If you have any additional comments you'd like to give us on the park, No.
Can I ask you a question?
I don't know. That's up to me.
Yeah, come on.
This is typically not a time for back and forth, but if you can, you know, quickly come up and ask a question, go ahead.
I think it would just go quickly like this. The neighbors you asked about the playground equipment, they're interested in some kind of innovative ideas. The way the slope and train goes, maybe building some slides into the train. There's two things really that kind of dictate what kind of equipment we can get. One is the engineering folks saying, you can do this, you can't do this. The other really is budget. And so if there's any way at some point the council can come back and tell us, you kind of have this to work with, because a $20,000 budget is very different than a $50,000 budget on the play equipment. That would be very helpful. Is that fair?
Thank you.
So if I can speak to just what his first point there real fast, the idea, the proposal that you have before you is obviously not an engineer's drawing. So it's subject to slopes. It's subject to what's there, what the land looks like, and what we can actually do. So what we would ask is that we take our proposal, meet with some engineers, and actually have this park kind of redesigned with these ideas in mind so that they can come back and say, hey, look, you don't have enough space to put the swings by the playset, or what you guys have looks great. I don't know. That's kind of beyond what we're proposing here.
Has the committee been out on the site and in the big Area 7, which I love, the play area? The thing I worry about is if they're kicking a soccer ball around, is that going to roll down?
It's not that steep.
Are we going to need a little?
It's more of a gentle slope. It's a slope. We wouldn't have city soccer functions there, but you could have a soccer practice there. It just wouldn't. It'd be on a little bit of a gradual decline, because the point where the metro water easement is actually fairly flat at that point, so it's kind of leading into that.
Okay.
Now, the area just outside of the 7, where the 5 is on that map, that's where it starts to get really steep with the retaining wall, actually, so that's why we're going to keep that native.
Any other questions from any council members? No? Chandler, thank you very much. This was just a discussion tonight, ladies and gentlemen. No action is being taken. Okay. Moving back to our agenda, now we'll do city business. Starting from my left, Mr. Bunker.
Mayor and Council, would like to remind everybody about the Emergency Management Town Hall meeting, which will happen on Thursday, February 12th, so that's a week from this Thursday, 7:00 p.m. here in this facility. We had a junior jazz player appearance last Tuesday, and Ian Clark of the Jazz and the Jazz Bear were in attendance, and there were a number of our junior jazz participants there that night. And if you don't know about junior jazz, it's awesome. There's a lot of kids in here that would be great at playing basketball with junior jazz. Cedar Hills Recreation Night at BYU Basketball was held last Saturday night. We had 79 participants from our city purchase tickets, and that was more than double of any other city. So congratulations, Cedar Hills. We were well represented. In January here in the Vista Room, we had 18 bookings in 1 week, which sets a new record for this facility. It's being well used, and that's great. We started a new art class this week with Pete Condor, and if you're interested in that, please contact Greg Gordon and the rec department. The first class was held last night with some Girl Scouts here in the city, so that was a great success. We are working with Intermountain Farmers Association to put on some new classes for gardening and tree pruning. And so those are just starting in the works, and we will be giving more information regarding that. But it's about time to prune those trees, so this is timely.
If they want to hold a session of that class in my front yard and prune my apricot tree,
do some examples.
They're welcome to use that as an example.
Okay, we will forward that to them. Questar is doing a project. They are replacing a high-pressure gas main all the way through the parking lot here at this facility, and then they will be going down Bay Hill Drive from the roundabout to Canyon Road. And so be aware of that. You know, with the good weather, the golf has considered opening the course on good weather days. But with Questar here, they've had to tear up some of our golf cart paths, and so it has limited our ability to open up. But Questar is trying to move through our portion of their project quickly. So
That's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Cipolla.
I do not have anything to report today.
Mrs. Reese.
The Planning Commission met their regular meeting, and they reviewed the new conceptual plans for the Blue Line proposal. I'm still waiting to get updated plans on that. I don't know if we've received them as the city. The information that was provided in the packet when Blue Line came to the Planning Commission that night, they actually had new drawings that they had just drawn up that day. But their conceptual plan, the building is rotated, and the building itself is all in the mixed office, I'm trying to remember what it's called now. The
mixed office retail.
Mixed office retail. There is some shared parking in the neighborhood retail portion. It's looking like their conceptual plan is 3 stories. They're still planning around 300 units. The Planning Commission gives some great feedback to them on what they would like to see as far as making it substantially the same as an assisted living center in order to comply with our code. And as soon as I get those new drawings, we'll forward them onto the council. And then they also discussed the Wilson Geddes residential subdivision, which will be cul-de-sacking off Bay Hill, and then a new subdivision right to the west of that, right off of Canyon Road. I think they gave some great feedback on that one as well, and I would imagine that we'll see those coming to the council fairly soon, as those ones, the preliminary plans were approved.
Okay.
And I haven't met with any of the other committees.
Thank you very much. So I had the distinct honor to represent our city last Saturday night at BYU basketball game, along with Greg Gordon. And so our city was the only city that was able to sell at least 50 tickets and support the Cougars that evening. And so kudos to Greg Gordon, as he spearheads that. And it was a great time. Appreciate that. We do have some meetings coming up. And so the next 1P Public Safety meeting is on the 19th of February, so I'll report back when we have that. Also, there's a Cultural Arts Committee meeting, which is, I believe, next week, and we'll report on that. And that is it. So, Mr. Crawley.
The Finance Committee, we actually met as a whole city council last Saturday and for a retreat over at the Highland Fire Station. And that went really well. We were able to review some of our goals and priorities for this next year on our budget. And it was a good six or seven hour event. And I just wanted to reiterate, since I'm on the Emergency Management Committee this next year, want everyone to come out on Thursday, February 12th, to the town hall meeting. And that's it.
Thank you. Mr. Geddes.
Nothing to report.
Mr. Augustus.
Yeah, just 2 quick things. North Point had a meeting. It actually took me 3 times longer to drive down there than the meeting lasted. So we got an update on the progress for the new building. What they're doing is they're actually replacing the current scale house in the way that you access North Point Solid Waste, which for everybody here is pretty much the Linden dump. So instead of going in on the east side where you access it kind of over the viaduct and you come across by the new power plant, they're actually creating a new entrance that will come in on the north side by the animal shelter. So it will actually be north of the animal shelter. They're doing a whole new scale house, putting in new scales, new roads, new C&D waste pad. I mean, it's a pretty good upgrade for the facility. And part of the problem they're having is they've got so many cars during the summer that queue up on the road coming in from the east, that Linden City is having problems with traffic and the construction vehicles and everything else down there, that it's been needed for quite some time. And so they're taking on that project, and they're hoping to have fairly good completion this summer. And I believe the scales are supposed to be in sometime this summer, so it should be up and running before too long. Then the General Plan Committee also met last week. We had a good meeting. We talked about where we want to take the committee, where things need to go, talked a little bit about our visions, what we see for our city, and kind of the concepts and a little bit of the vision statement that we believe Cedar Hills has. We also talked a little bit about maybe holding a town hall meeting maybe not a town hall meeting is the right way, working with the different committees and the different boards within our city so that we can talk to them, get their feedback. So committees like the Planning Commission, Family Festival Committee, Parks and Trails, Arts and Events, so that we can get their input as where they see our city headed for the future. And so that'll be upcoming also.
Hey, thank you very much.
Mayor, could I say one more item?
Uh-huh.
So just we have a lot of scouts here tonight and people who might be interested in this. On February 23rd, there is a Jazz Cedar Hills Night, and tickets are available for $15, and that includes chips and a hot dog and drink and admission to the game, and it's Jazz versus San Antonio Spurs, which will be awesome. You guys will really want to go to this. We have tickets available at the city office, so tell your parents that you want to go to the Jazz versus the Spurs, 23rd of February.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
7 p.m.
Let's move on to our schedule items. Item number 8 is an action item on vote by mail election schedule for this fall. Colleen Mulvey, city recorder. Mr. Bunk, are you helping or is Colleen doing it?
We'll have Colleen take that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor and council, we have before us our election year. We have 3 council seats that are up for election this year, and I would like to find out your feeling about authorizing an all vote by mail election, all absentee ballot election. We talked about this a few months ago in a work session, and in your packet I gave you the code, I gave you some statistics, and that in Utah County, the county elections division does not run city elections. They do in Davis County, they do in Salt Lake County, but we don't have that option, so the city recorder is left with the task of running the election, hiring the poll workers, training them, ordering all the supplies, and that. So it's a lot to do for a really low turnout. In 2013, 2 years ago, our primary election, we had a 13% voter turnout, and for the general election, 28%. Now, in your packet, I had the letter of the certified results that the lieutenant governor published, and in his paragraph, well, he talks about the voting convenience and the voting by mail, the pilot program that they started and initiated, that 10 counties conducted their election entirely by mail, increasing the percentage of their voters who cast their ballot before election day or on election day up to 49% increase, and that was just on average. So I even think if we can go from 28% to 49%, it would be well worth it. I looked into the cost, and it'll cost us about the same if we do it where I manually do everything. We have to pay for the postage. It might be a little bit more. If I hire this company that will do it, they have a first-class discounted postage because they have the bulk rate. So it's going to run about the same amount of money. So either way, I don't mind, but I just really would prefer that we kind of spearhead this and move Utah County into this vote by mail that's become very popular. And then I was pointing this out to Mayor Gigi earlier that our new Lieutenant Governor, Mr. Cox, is forward thinking. He's even formed a committee in July of this past year, and he's calling it the I Vote. And it's not even by mail anymore. They're meeting and they're getting together to introduce electronic voting. And that's either going to be by email. I wouldn't even be surprised on the road that you're going to have an app on your phone that's secure enough to vote. He wants to be in the forefront. That's why he pushed this vote by mail program that's been really successful. And now they're on their way to do this electronic. So I figure we can kind of start catching up and do this. I would really like to try it. I'd like to see us to get a higher turnout. And, you know, regardless if we do it the old way or the new way, it's going to be a lot of work, but I don't care. I like elections anyway. I brought a couple samples of what the ballot would, how it gets mailed back. And they have like these really, it's really cool how they have secure flaps now. So I have a sample of what it looks like before you fill it out and after you fill it out. So you can see how secure the ballot is in here.
That's one that's not open. before it's signed. And then after you sign it, you seal the flap down. It gets opened by me. I verify the signature. But this ballot is securely sealed in here, stays in here until election day. And these just get locked up. So it's not like the old style ones where you just see somebody's signature on the outside. They're pretty secure, and you know, they really up the game with security and all that. So I just want to know your questions, because I'm ready to answer them.
So I'll start this off and just say I'm fully on board with this. I think this is great, and I hope the council is as well. As there's not much of a difference in cost. Maybe that'll improve over the years. But if we can increase our voting percentage to 49% or so, that would be fantastic. And so I know there's a lot of people who may be what we would call shut-ins, perhaps, who don't make it out on voting day, particularly if it's a rainy day or a snowy day, and giving a lot of people the option to vote now who maybe wouldn't vote is fantastic. Yeah. So I fully endorse this.
Thank you. And it's not giving a lot of people. You give every registered voter has to have a ballot. So you don't have to sign up for any list. If we choose vote by mail, then we have to send every registered voter in the city of Cedar Hills a ballot and an envelope to mail it back to us. That's just the law. It makes sense.
So, Colleen, I love the idea. I would love to get an increase in voter participation. The more residents that we have participating in that voting process is better for us as a city. We talked about this extensively at another council meeting, and for people who still want to go in person to vote, they can just bring their ballot with them.
Correct.
They can turn it into you. They don't have to mail it back if they're worried about getting lost in the mail. They still can come in person to the city office if they want to, or they can mail it in. So they still have that option available to them. So I think it's a great idea.
You may remember I strongly advocated for this over the last year or two. So I am right on board. I'm willing to make a motion unless there's other discussion.
Great. Anyone from my right side?
Yeah. Likewise. I mean, I think it's a great idea. It's something that we talked about several years ago. And I think the way things are going, technology and with everything else that's going on, I think it's kind of a logical step to go. So I think even if we had to pay a little bit more for it, for the amount of results we're getting for it, I think the cost is minimal compared to the results that we get.
Thank you.
So if we do it at this next election, would we then, once we do it, would we do it continually? What if it doesn't work as good as we expect?
Well, you know what? It's going to work because I'm in charge of it. But
I like that attitude.
Colleen, I know you will make it work.
But it's like, you know, we'll just have to evaluate it at that point. And maybe nobody does it and nobody wants to do it by mail. Well, you don't know until you try. But again, it's not been tried in Utah County yet, so we're going to spearhead this. And there's a lot of other cities that are kind of sort of waiting to see what we're going to do.
So there's so if it's a general election coming up, presidential election, right?
Yeah. If there's a primary,
2016.
If there's a primary, it'll
be. Oh, that's right. 20.
In August, and then. Of course, in November, if we don't have to have a primary
election. That's 25, yeah, so it won't be a general.
We're only
municipal
lesson election on an odd year. So, and the other thing, too, is people will see the beauty of voting by mail, and they're going to get on the county's permanent absentee voter list, so they don't have to go wait in line to vote for the president. They can vote in their pajamas at their dining room table and just drop it in the mail.
So would we do that for the general election in 2016, or is that?
I don't do those elections. That's the county. And so that's where maybe some people would be confused, but I'm going to do a huge campaign to educate people about the beauty of vote by mail anyway. So I'm going to try to get most of our residents on the permanent if that's what they choose.
So one other quick question. Does this create a lot of extra work for you as far as vote counting? I mean, do we still expect?
No, because
it's there's still individual the way we do it now, right, in the municipal election.
Yeah. So what happens is that, say, that goes to precinct one, if that's where it came from. It gets locked and held until election day. And then come election day, I hire three poll workers to help me. That's all I need is three to count the ballots. And we can just start counting the minute the polls open at 7, because the rule is once you have 20 ballots, you can start counting. And then, so the results will come a lot faster, too.
And then if someone walked in and voted in person and they mailed something, and you'd catch that because you would checkmark each resident against.
Yeah.
And I'm going to play the devil's advocate for a minute because theoretically there's always the other side of the story or the other side of the argument. The arguments against it that I've heard are that there's been restrictions on voting in the past. It used to be that you could only vote if you were a landowner, for instance, because they wanted to make sure that only people that were educated or whatnot voted. That's old-style thinking. I'm not advocating that. But at the same time, when people have to go through a little bit of effort to go somewhere to vote, then they might more likely be people that have paid attention and you know the candidates and things like that, whereas people that are at home in their pajamas may not have researched the issues. So that is one of the arguments against it.
Okay, let me give you an answer to that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. By law, I have to have these absentee ballots out 28 days or sooner, you know, way out there. So you have plenty of time to Google your candidates, to go to your meet the candidates nights. You can wait until the very last minute. You can walk it in the office if you haven't decided till election day. I'm going to have a ballot box there. If somebody doesn't want to mail it, they can come in, they can put it in the ballot box. So you actually have more time to make a more educated choice.
I was actually going to say that too, because when you go, you're in a hurry, you don't have time to research, you just got to get there before it closes, and you get there and you're in the ballot box and you say, wow, I haven't even had time to look at these people, I'm just going to make my best guess. Whereas I think people will actually sit down at the internet and try to learn before they mark the ballot.
Another thing I've learned and heard is that it kind of makes the candidates stepped up to the plate a little bit more, because they have to be prepared. They have to have something out there online for somebody to read, because if you don't even bother to do that, I would think that somebody wouldn't be voting for you. I would hope not.
Yep. So because of that, I'm in favor. At first, I wasn't, because I heard the other side of the argument. But now that I think through that, I think I'm in favor.
In any other issue that would arise in a regular election, like not registered to vote, I didn't get a ballot, I made a mistake, whatever, I handle all of those exactly the same way. There's provisional ballots. You get up to 3 spoiled ballots if you made a mistake. You know, all the rules still apply. The only difference is we won't have the polling centers open. The city office building will be the polling place. And
One last comment. The electronics scares me still. I wouldn't promote that, because there's already a lot of voter fraud, and if it's all electronic, it'd be kind of easy for someone really good at electronics to rig the system. So you wouldn't be able to have a count of physical items there. So anyway,
I see
for
on
the
his,
future.
on the lieutenant governor's list of all his committee members, he's got several universities, and he's got law clerks, and he's got security. How do you call that?
An IT expert.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to say. So he compiled this huge committee to kind of look into it and then do a pilot thing. We already do a few by email anyway, overseas and military, that they have to sign a waiver that says, I understand that somebody, the city recorder, is going to see who I voted for, but this is how I want to vote.
And going back to Councilmember Crawley's comment, I mean, no matter how easy we make it for people, there's still going to be a percentage of people that don't go out and research the candidates and go, oh, I'm just going to vote alphabetically, or I'm going to vote for this particular pattern. I mean, no matter how easy we make it, there's still going to be that percentage.
That's true.
Okay. Thank you very much, Colleen. So I will entertain a motion now.
I'm ready to make a motion. I move that we authorize the 2015 primary and general municipal elections be conducted as an entirely absentee ballot, vote-by-mail election.
And I'll second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 9. Action item on awarding a contract for the Recreation Center concessions.
Mr. Gordon.
Mayor and Council, in front of you have the packets from the entities that came to us that expressed interest, that have reviewed our proposal. We had 3 food vendors who double as caterers that would be able to help us in our business here at the community center. After going through an extensive interview process with each of them, it really came down to two. One of them, as I mentioned earlier, did their homework as they worked on their business plan, crunched some numbers, found out it just wasn't going to work for them. So it came down to two people, State Street Grill and Vista Point. And based upon that, they brought food, showed us what their food would entail, their business. Well, one of them brought their business plan and their price point on their menu, and you have those in front of you. State Street Grill really did not come with what they were asked to bring, so that kind of hurt a little bit from that standpoint. And the price point really plays into it a lot for us, because we know our residents really need a good place to go out, get some good food, and be able to do their thing. What we came down to as a group is just going through the pros and cons of those two entities and deciding which one was the best for us. And we recommend that the council approve final contract negotiations with Vista Point and authorize the mayor, city manager, to work with our city attorney to review the contract with them. Any questions?
So I have a comment.
Yes.
I feel like this is a really important contract, and that the city council should be the one to give its final approval on the contract. And then if we just say we're gonna let the mayor and him work it out, that scares me a little. I think there's strength in numbers. I think there's wisdom in numbers of the five council members to approve a final contract. So that's my opinion on this right now, is that we should have it come back in a couple of weeks and get the final approval of the city council, so that there's no question about whether it was approved as the final contract.
Okay. Thank you. I'll let the council debate that. I just want to talk about the process here. And so we were lucky to have two groups come in and present, and I think the group of five or six of us were very overwhelmed with the proposal that was made to us, and felt totally comfortable in so many areas. And so I endorse this recommendation by the staff. I think it's the right one. So,
and they happen to be here tonight if you have any questions for them as well.
Mr. Richardson and his wife,
if they were missing,
is here. And so council can ask them questions if they'd like, but is there any questions? Greg, go ahead.
Yes, I have some questions.
Okay.
They're really easy ones. So on the sheet we were given, it says Vista Point, and it says B4 Group with Killer Bee Entertainment and 24609 Inc.
Okay.
And so I'd like to know who each of those three are and what their qualifications are.
I'll let Eric speak to that.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Appreciate it. So one of the things that's unique to our approach, I believe, is that we understand that whoever is successful in running this operation needs to hit multiple points. If you're normally evaluating a business opportunity like this, you'd be looking at your daily traffic load. And other than the people who are already destination-oriented to this facility, there really is none. It's not on a main road. It's not even on a somewhat main road. It's off in the side. And so in order to have a viable business, it needs to draw people in. And so the groups there that are involved really come down to some important components of our plan. Killer Bee Entertainment is a group that has ran comedy clubs across the nation, in LA, in New York, here in Utah. They book a lot of acts who can come in and do family-friendly entertainment. And by so doing, bring in extra people. Those types of venues, even if done in the corner of this little cafe, can bring in 20 or 30 people extra on a Friday or Saturday night, which winds up being the difference in between having a return and having no ROI on the investment. 24609 is involved with the social media. Our closest competitors are ones that really have a niche food, something that's fresh, something that's local, something that is exciting and energetic, and a lot of that occurs through social media. And so it's, I think you'd liken it most close to a food truck or a small eatery or the type of following you might get in some of the big cities in Chicago and New York and LA. We do that here locally through social media. And then before, simply Mrs. Richardson here, that's her group who will be running the day-to-day operations of it. The group here has experience in a lot of different areas with events, with social media, with small business, with our local community here since the 90s, and so that's kind of how it comes together with what starts off as a little bit of a hodgepodge, but I think it winds up being the secret sauce, we believe, to having something be successful. So that's a long answer to a short question.
That is wonderful. Thank you.
But it was also your second and third question, so
forgive me. I'm also wondering whether the conversations included anything about golf course and concessions in the sense of getting food out to golfers while they're on the course.
I can, or you can.
Yes, we did discuss that. In fact, for us, that is a big component for us. We just don't have the staffing at the golf course to be able to do that, you know, within our budget. So we have discussed that with them, and they are extremely interested in taking that over for us and having somebody consistently out on the course. We offered them our concession cart. They could use that as much as they want to. And they have the ability to open up a shack down below if we can get that approved.
And I think if I could just add to that, that winds up being one of the major components of the plan. The business plan includes really being able to harvest from every location. So servicing those people who are golfing, giving them an excellent experience is important, not just for the daily golfers, but also on the tournaments. We know that the city has lost tournaments this last year due to the inability of prior groups to be able to execute on being able to provide for tournaments. And so that's important. Really, all events happening at this beautiful center. And boy, I'm sorry that you guys faced the wrong direction. The view is really that way, not this way. But this is a beautiful place, and it's really trying to take advantage of everything that happens here, be it a wedding, a recreation event, golfing, whatever it may be. It's being able to capture those people and give them a great experience here locally, close to their homes. Everyone who comes to this building has some connection to Cedar Hills. It might be through their boss's work and he lives here. It might be through a wedding of someone who is here. It might be from something of numerous areas, but these are all our people, and so we need to take care of them, and that includes the golf.
I want to clarify something real quick. My comment, I just wanted to make sure that you understand that I'm really excited that you want to take this on, and I think it can be really good for us, and then so I didn't want you to take my comment as a negative. It's more the process. I want to make sure that we approve as a city council the final agreement, and I hope we do get into final agreement with you guys, and I hope you guys are successful. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Councilman McCrawley, and that's the same does is this is a big undertaking, and so whatever the process is and whatever the council decides, we're good with that. We do have concerns about timeliness. In order to be hitting the golf season, there's a lot of work to be done to hit the ground running. So that's a concern to us, and some of that's on us. You know, we know that the city's been entertaining this for a little while, and we appreciate the opportunity. That's our biggest concern there. But this is a big deal, and honestly, if we can't find a contract that does benefit everyone, then there's no use in doing it. We don't want to be here just for a few months or a year until the city moves on. We're looking at a long-term relationship. There's going to be no profit for some time in this venture. It's going to be a labor of love, and so that's what we're looking for, something that goes on for a long, long time, not just a few months, not just a season.
Do you have some funding to make it through the hard time in the first year or two?
Mm-hmm. We do have some funding.
Okay. That's, you don't have to expound. I just was curious, I guess.
Any other questions from...
Yes.
Yeah, Mrs. Richardson, go ahead.
Mayor Richardson, how long do you think it will take you to get up and running?
We are anticipating... Okay. That we would have a soft opening sometime in mid-March.
Okay.
And a grand opening by April 1st. That really coincides with the golf season. It's a little hard to tell, like it's been reported on to you this evening. Weather has a lot to do with that, but we think that we need about 4 or 5 weeks to get everything in place. We have a lot of people on our team that we've been talking to bring in some catering expertise, to bring in some chefs, some cooking expertise, from some great places around, and build that team. But we can't really do that until we have everything solidified. And so, if we were working backwards, we need at least 3 weeks of work to be able to get from when that contract's signed to where we can be serving food.
Okay.
And that's a long time to fast, but we're willing to go forward with that. So.
Any more questions?
So I guess from my perspective, the primary difficulty in making this successful is that you've got different markets that you need to serve. You've got the golfers that are coming. You've got people who are coming for rec classes. You've got catering. Those are each different kinds of food, potentially. And then the biggest thing I hear from residents is they want a family-friendly option for the menu. I see that you've done that with a $4 burger. I think that's much better price point than we had here previously. Ice cream cones are a great thing to get kids here in the afternoons. So I'm wondering, what are you thinking in terms of how are you going to manage to serve all those different segments of your market simultaneously?
Yeah, thank you. And that's, we didn't really start off with this being our goal, and it actually has festered a little bit until we thought maybe this is a good idea after all. But the scariest thing about this facility, and one of the most unique things, is any business person who's going out to open up a restaurant as a business would look at their circles, their trade circles, would figure out the traffic, would figure out what their target was, and hope that if they were successful in marketing to that radius, that they would be successful. But there's not enough radius here for any one thing, which makes it really, really tough. At the same point in time, there's not enough volume to be diverse. You can't have a Cheesecake Factory type of menu here where you can be all things to everyone. We have talked to quite a few people in the community. We have deep roots here in the community through the members of the team, and we've had a lot of great ideas, and we're looking for even more ideas because that's important to us. We've also had to come to the realization that we're not going to be all things to everyone, but if we concentrate on our 6 or 7 targets here, I think that we can be successful in enough. One of the keys to doing that is creating a menu that is fresh and fulfilling and a good value, but also that can be scaled in different directions. So, for example, we have a wonderful turkey salad, and the turkey in that salad, we oven roast, it's spatchcock, dry brined, and prepared in the exact same way you would do for the salad as you do for the turkey sandwich, and as you would if you were doing a catered meal for someone. And so you're taking those same ingredients and you're moving them around a little bit and creating an offering that can appeal to lots of different people while keeping the underlying ingredients relatively low. And so there's a number of things that that as we've talked about what should be on the menu, that if we would say, boy, I really wish that we serve XYZ. And I really like XYZ, but we're having to pare that down and find things where we can find that scalability in all the different areas. And that, I believe, will enable us to, at the same time, create this lunch special for the high school kids where they want to come up here because we all know that McDonald's doesn't want them, and have a great value at that end, but also be able to serve something that would apply towards the person who works from home in our neighborhood and wants to come and eat lunch here, and something that we can put into box lunch for a corporate event that's going to be happening in this room where they're going to be presenting whatever their thing is. And so it's figuring out how to hit on all those different events. And so as you look through some of our items as we've put together on our sample menu, that's really the underlying theme, is how can we take the same ingredients and combine them in different ways to make something exciting and fresh.
Okay, and then the other biggest challenge you're going to face, which I'm sure you're aware of, is just location, right? If you were going to open up a restaurant, your first choice would probably be on the State Street or down by the freeway exit. And so how are you going to cope with
trying to draw in traffic other than the golfers who are naturally going to come here.
Yeah, thank you. And that is truly the genesis of this dream is I happened to be here. We were here for Brooks Brothers' wedding, and boy, what a wonderful facility! And it was just great being here and seeing it used the way that in one of the ways in which it was envisioned. And while we were here, we talked to Greg Gordon, and he mentioned that Sammy was moving out. And we saw the sign on the door, and Greg said, "Hey, can you guys think of anyone who might come in here?" And so we spent several weeks talking to our contacts in the community to see if we couldn't get them to come here. But of course, this is not where they wanted to be. And so as that grew and that thought was, we just kept coming back to us, well, maybe there's something else here. And so, no, you wouldn't open this up. But when you think about food, you know, just about anyone could go and buy the ingredients for your favorite meal at the store and learn how to prepare it yourself, maybe even with a little practice, and you could do it on your own terms, probably for cheaper than you buy it at any restaurant. So the reason why you go out to eat is not simply off of the food there. But I think there's something more to it. It's about the experience. And one of the things that we will do to gain that loyalty and that repeat business is to treat people that way. We're a small community. We will always be a small community. And so people need to come here because of how they feel. And we will give them great food, and it will be at a great price point. And we will have great events that we're participating in to help have people come here. And we will be serving the clientele, the golf course, and this reception center functions and the recreation functions in a great manner. But really, it's making them feel so great about being here that they want to come back and that this is where they want to go. And I think that there's enough people in this community who would really rather not go somewhere else, to go to the store, thank goodness we have Walmart, to the bank, to the gas station, and now a great eating option, that I think that people stay here. And I love going to each of those locations and seeing my friends and neighbors at Hart's and at Walmart and at the bank. And I think that this will be one of those places too where we'll have people come here as their destination, because they know if they come here, they're going to see their friends and their neighbors and their people that they haven't seen in a few months and be able to enjoy a good meal at a great price. And that's how we're going to do it. And so it's going to take some time. It's going to take some word of mouth. And we're going to have to really pound the pavement hard and try and hit each of those groups as we can identify them and bring them in here and earn their business. But we will definitely have to work hard to earn that. It's not going to come natural or easy.
Thank you. Any more questions from my left side?
Could I make one comment? And I echo pretty much what everyone else said. So I agree with what's been said, and I wish you the best of luck, Mr. Richardson, and at all. The only thing I would suggest, I mean, I would hope, is that in the long run, labor of love's work for a while, but you've got to start making some money too. So make sure that, you know, you make it so that you can make money. Otherwise, the labor of love will wear out.
Nope. Thank you, Councilmember Gedison. When I say labor of love, it's not that there's never return. We have more preferable hobbies than spending long nights and weekends here. But we plan on putting that back into the business to grow it for some time. And so I think it will pay off financially. There is an ROI. I sure hope so, because if this doesn't work, then I'm not sure what Plan B honestly is. But I've believed in this from the beginning that there is a viable option for this location, and it just takes someone who understands the community and the dynamics that are very specific to here. And so
thank you, and I think you do.
Okay, Mr. Gustis, you have any comments or questions?
Yeah, I just had maybe two quick comments. There was a great group of people that got together and reviewed all the vendors that came and made their proposals to us. And, I mean, it's not an easy decision sitting there talking to people and trying to get their take and get their vision for what they believe the room should do and what the grill should do. And a lot of tough questions were asked. I mean, we went into a lot of detail, and we grilled them pretty hard. I mean, there were some really good questions that came out of that. And, I mean, I'm glad I'm not sitting on that side of the table, because it's a lot of work. I mean, it's a lot of investment. For a Cedar Hills residence, I mean, there is a lot on the line, because there's a lot to lose, but there's also a lot to gain. And
that's one reason I actually like to have a resident come to us with a proposal like this, is because they are invested in our community. They're not an outsider. They're not somebody out there that's just going to disappear in another 3 months when maybe it's not quite what they thought, or maybe it's not really what they wanted to do. So with a resident, I mean, there's a lot more at stake and they're a lot more vested. And those were a lot of the things that we talked about during these meetings. So I think it's great.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate Mr. Crawley's comment and concern. I would encourage the council to allow Mr. Richardson and his group time to get up and moving. And so you can work any concerns you have into a motion, or, but you obviously have the ability to speak with myself, Mr. Bunker, and Mr. Johnson about things that you would want in a contract. So I don't think that it takes away from your ability to give input. But I'll entertain a motion at this time.
I want a little more conversation real quick. Does anyone else share that concern with me, that we're not going to approve the final contract, or am I alone in that one?
So let me give you kind of my take on it. Okay. The grill is probably one of the bigger topics that goes on currently within this building. I mean, we have the golf conversation, we have the events and the recreation, but the grill for our residents is a pretty big thing for them. Mm-hmm. Two and a half years ago, it got shut down, first part of November, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And really, our residents didn't have any notice, they didn't really have any feedback before it was shut down. And I got some really upset people on my doorstep wanting to know what was going on. So I think people do take things like that personally. And ultimately, I mean, we're the ones that help kind of act as that buffer between what staff does and what the city does. And so I think we're ultimately responsible. I mean, we were elected by our friends and neighbors to represent them. So I would agree. I mean, I think ultimately it does come back to us. And so I think the council should have the ultimate right to decide whether that contract goes forward or not. So I would agree.
Anyone else? Any thoughts on that?
Okay. I will entertain a motion now.
I have another comment.
Go ahead.
And because I don't want to bring this up, but I feel like I need to before the vote. And that is, the motion is whether we're going to let the mayor basically sit down and it'll be reviewed by the city attorney and city manager. But basically, the mayor is given the authority to go and negotiate this. There has been a relationship between the mayor and Mr. Richardson, in that Mayor Richardson was the mayor when you were city councilman. If it doesn't go through the normal process, I'm a little bit afraid that there might be some talk of backroom deals, you know, or political favors. And that's a concern to me. I don't want anything like that. I want us to go into this with no regrets, no questions about whether it's a valid contract. I want it to be done the right way. And so I could just foresee that being an issue if we move forward and say, yeah, mayor, go ahead and negotiate with him. So I wanted to do that to protect you and you. And that's my concern.
So I appreciate that. Council's welcome to do whatever they want to do. So, I would just like to give them the opportunity to get up and running as quickly. And obviously, I'm not negotiating by myself. And so Mr. Johnson and Mr. Bunker are helping with that, but the council has the ability to give whatever input they want.
So okay. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think in most cases you're right. We do, as a council, generally review contracts before they are approved. So I'm fine with that. But if they need enough time to have that soft opening by March, I would say, if that's the direction the council wants to go, then we need to be prepared to hold a special meeting to approve that contract, not wait 2 more weeks.
Time is of the essence for us at the course. Mm-hmm. And everything too, so
I'm good with that.
So I would like to make a motion then. So I would like to motion to approve a concessions contract agreement with Vista Point that would be executed with the mayor, but negotiated by the mayor, the city attorney, city manager, and the committee that actually reviewed all of the applicants for taking over the grill. And based on the recommendation from that body or that group, they make a recommendation to the council and hold a special meeting if the council needs to approve that, which I believe they do.
I second that motion.
Okay. I have a motion that's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Are there any opposed? Motion is unanimous. Congratulations. Thank you. Moving on. Item number 11. discussion on water conservation policies. Mr. Bunker.
Mayor and Council, recently the Mayor, member of City Council, and staff got together along with Richard Noble, who was the chair of the Water Conservation Committee. We met to discuss water conservation efforts citywide and also communication efforts with regards to water conservation. Mm-hmm. And some of the topics that were brought up in that meeting included xeriscaping and alternatives for that. Currently, there is not a xeriscaping ordinance in our current city code. Possible rebate incentives for those people who can show a reduction in their water consumption. The application of grants for the potential of a water metering project. And then also efforts to give more education to our residents through media. And so we wanted to bring this back to the City Council because some of these items are really policy decisions. And particularly if we are going to request that the Planning Commission start the process to look at city code that would allow a different landscaping than what is currently required in the city code. So we wanted to bring that back and get your feedback and your direction on those items.
So can I add a few things to that?
You bet.
Daniel and I were part of that meeting. Was that last week?
I don't remember.
You were part of that meeting, whatever it was. So the big things that we talked about, well, I mean, there was that list here. It was funny that residents, if they want to xeriscape their yard so to conserve water, right now we don't allow them to do that. Our ordinances don't allow for xeriscaping. So I think that's a thing that we need to fix. So if residents want to, in order to conserve water, especially since we're pushing this water conservation effort, they should have that ability. I'm not sure we figured out whether, I don't know how the rebates would work. I don't think as a city we're in a financial situation where we can do it. But then the grant application for the metering project, just to add to that, Richard Noble presented on that. And according to what he had found with other cities who had done, I believe he gave West Jordan was an example, you can apply for that grant, but you're not required to use it. So if you apply for it, but your city council decides, no, we don't want to go that direction, you're not on the hook for anything. And they hold that money, if you are approved, for a considerable amount of time. I believe he said that West Jordan received a grant 7 years ago and to date still hasn't used it, but that money is still sitting waiting for them to use it if they so choose. So going down the direction of at least applying for the grant does in no way obligate the city to move forward. And then Daniel and I will be working on the communication aspects of it, of just water conservation in general this year. Right, Daniel?
Any other thoughts? And I've got a question for David. So, you know, we've talked about this cost, and I think the number $2 million has been brought up a couple times for putting meters throughout the whole city. And then we've talked about grants to maybe cover a piece of that cost. I'm wondering the feasibility of, instead of bonding, which is always difficult for projects like this, can we just add a fee to a utility bill? $10 a month for every resident would bring in $250,000, and then you can do it over 4 years. And so you just say we're gonna do a fourth of the city every year for 4 years and spaced out that way. Is that feasible to do?
Yeah. Again, like we talked about in the previous item with the parks, the feasibility of having a company come in and do a quarter of your city at a time is going to cost us more. But it may be possible to have that fee in advance of a major project. So start that fee, and 4 years later, citywide, everyone has meters that year. So
I mean, you're not paying any interest that way.
Right.
So potentially you're saving some on that.
Yeah. So that's a possibility.
Okay. Any of you gentlemen have anything to say down there?
No, I think
one of the things that came up in this meeting, every year
the city gets real close to maximizing our potential output, especially through July and August. And this last year, we had more rainfall in the later part of the summer than we normally have, which really was a big benefit to the city in many ways. And had we not had that extra rainfall, we would have gotten really close to that limit. And the last thing we want to do is run out of water or get so low on our resources that we can't supply that, you know, that utility to our residents. So we do need to continue to try to reduce our water consumption citywide. The city needs to continue our efforts in our parks, in our golf course, in the different areas of, you know, the different city facilities, and our residents as well. So we're all in this together. We're all trying to make this work for our entire community. But water conservation has to be a discussion. It has to be something we work on.
So two other things that came up from that meeting. Number one, we talked about the Bowen Collins and Associates study that we had done in 2012, where they analyzed our water, not our usage, but our needs, operations and O&M costs. I can't even think anymore. Our O&M costs, our future needs to update the system. And I think one of the things that was determined in that meeting as we reviewed the study was that Bowen and Collins didn't take into account the amount of water that we're using and the strain that's having on our system. So where they felt like our equipment should last X number of years, it's really not going to. And so the rate increases that they recommended were based upon some historical data, but not overutilizing our system as we currently are. So that was why at the retreat we talked about the possibility of updating our Bowen Collins and Associates study to get a more comprehensive view of what we're actually using, not just what we should be. There's something else I was going to say, and I can't remember.
No, I agree. And so for me, there were a couple of no-brainer things that came out of the meeting. One is we ought to update our Bowen and Collins study so we have some better data in terms of where our system is going given the heavy usage it has. The other one is we ought to update our ordinances to allow xeriscaping. And then the third one was we ought to be putting out some educational videos. I think our residents felt a little browbeaten because we kept telling them, use less water, you're using too much. I'd really like to see our approach taken where we say, here's some great ways that you can reduce your water usage. Here's how you might think about re-landscaping. Here's a video on how to do xeriscaping on part of your yard, and maybe that'll help soften the message.
I do remember the second thing. I think we talked about staff taking the lead on this to begin with, but staff had recommended that we need to have some policies in place on priority if a well goes down or a pump goes down. What happens in those situations? Where does the priority from the water resources we have go?
Yeah.
And so I believe staff is going to take the first stab at that at some point.
Well, we were seeking some direction from the city.
Yeah, I think we need to, as a council, we need to have a discussion as to what happens. Let's imagine that this year, that we have a year like last year, except the monsoons don't come.
Right.
And we start running low, and then a pump fails in the middle of August instead of late September. Now we're really, really stuck. We don't have enough water for the city. What are we going to do? Are we just going to tell people, have at it, water until there's no more, and you snooze, you lose? Are we going to start saying, you know what, you get half the city waters on Monday and Friday and the other half waters on Wednesday and Thursday?
And the big question is, what priority does the golf course take? Because we, you know, if it dries out and then no one wants to golf there, then it has a lot of revenue
expense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's a big question.
So we need to have discussions about where we would prioritize use of water in the city.
Well, even worse, let's say we don't get any rain this spring and all of a sudden all the water drains out of the mountains and is gone and we don't have water, which very easily could happen. I mean, if you look at the last couple of months, yeah, we're sitting okay with water, but we haven't done great. And if we keep pumping water the way we are, I mean, we very easily could be in trouble pretty quick.
Yeah.
So what might make sense, I know at some point you had put together some, or maybe it was Richard Noble that did, some possible scenarios of things that could go wrong. Maybe it was in that town hall meeting that he held. Maybe
it was, it was the Hansen, Allen, and Luce study.
Yes.
That showed that scenario.
The different scenarios.
And
you know, if a well goes down, how we're going to feed the system.
Yeah.
We went through several scenarios. I think five scenarios.
I think there were five or six. And so maybe what we need to do is bring those to the council and then talk through those one at a time, because in every one of those scenarios, we run out of water. So we need to discuss what the policy is for how you what the prioritization is going to be in each of those scenarios, or how we're going to handle those situations.
And we have multiple sources of water, so it's not like we'll be completely out of water. It's just we won't have enough.
I'm talking about PI water. We would be out of PI water.
Water. There's water. There's three or four different sources. It's just a matter of it won't be enough water. So rationing for sure will happen no matter what if we do have
the
well.
Yeah, part of the problem with that is we don't have any way to meter or ration it short of saying you water on this day and you water on this day.
We have control at the major. There's some major places where we have control of the water, right? We could say this pump is going to run this time, or I don't know. Tell me about the options we have as far as areas that we could regulate.
We basically have three zones in the city. Mm-hmm. And really, there are valves in the roadways. I mean, we can shut road by road down. Mm-hmm. That's a very difficult and a very daunting task for Public Works to keep track of that and do that. Mm-hmm. As far as delivery, once you send it to a zone, really everyone in the zone gets it. But the people at the bottom of the zone get it at a higher pressure. Mm-hmm. So as that zone drains out, the people at the top end of the zone have zero water, while people at the bottom have water. Then when you fill the zone back up, again, people at the bottom of the zone get water first. And if they're consuming it as fast as it's coming into the system, then the people in the top of the zone get no water ever.
Right.
So we've seen that scenario before.
I wish we had a scenario where we had too much water.
Well, and there are scenarios where we do run out of PI water. The only well that we have that goes into our PI system is Cottonwood Well. So if Cottonwood Well went down, we would run out of PI water.
We couldn't divert it from another source.
Yeah, so there's three scenarios that were presented at that town hall meeting that you're referring to. They were called Scenario 4, 5, and 6. Scenario 4 was a well failure that was either the Cottonwood Well or the Harvey Well experiencing a mechanical breakdown. And what we were told is that we could increase deliveries from the North CUP turnout to deliver water to the system. That's a short-term situation because we have a limited quantity of water we can divert due to our contract with them. We would need to take what they said immediate action to reduce demand on the system so we could avoid high velocities in the booster pump.
But at the same time,
in other words, we need to somehow immediately restrict usage. Scenarios 5 and 6 are if a booster pump fails at pond 10 or at pond 12, there's enough redundancy in the pumps that we can get by, but normally these pumps cycle on and off, so they're not overworked. If one of them fails, then the others would need to be on for longer periods, which increases a cascading failure, the chances of a cascading failure. And again, in that case, we would need to reduce demand on the system. And he made the point that in both of these cases, we could avoid immediate emergency measures if we had reduced our demand due to conservation. So in other words, if we had meters in place and that encouraged people to water at the rates that the state recommends, then we could endure both of these worst case scenarios and be just fine.
That's right.
Did we borrow against our water shares for last year?
No, we were okay last year. We managed that pretty well.
So we're a little bit under.
So for CUP.
Yes.
Hasn't CUP indicated that they're no longer going to allow us to go over our allotted water shares?
It's a 5-year average, and again, it's based on availability. If they don't have the water to send us, then they won't. They can't.
Right.
So, but if they have some extra water and it's that average, so we've gone over a couple of years in a row until last year. So we're still in the negative territory there. We have a negative balance.
Okay. Now here's the thought that I brought up before too. To meter costs say $2 million. To have an extra pump sitting on hand would cost $50,000 to $100,000 if one went down. But then you still have a couple weeks of getting someone to come and replace the pump. You know, get a crane out there and drop it down. But either way, you're looking 2 to 3 weeks downtime, which is something we could usually manage through. 2 to 3 weeks, but yeah.
I think my big concern with that is our warranty on those products start the day we purchase, and so we could potentially get into an issue where we have an unwarranted product that sat on the shelves for a couple of years and it doesn't work, and it's no longer covered.
It doesn't work. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yep. So you're, but still, it's 50 to 100,000 versus 2 million. So that's a thought that.
Well, but even without even a pump going down, though, I mean, we could run into the scenario where we're pumping too much water, and we've got, either got to put restrictions in place or something else, because, like David said, CUP may not have enough water to send us. So even throwing a downed pump out, I mean, we still have to look at, well, what are we going to do, because we can't go with the status quo anymore. I mean, we've got to do something to reduce our usage.
One other item.
If I told you that you could have all of the electricity you wanted and you had to pay a flat fee of $10 per month, you would use all the electricity you possibly could imagine.
And I'm buying.
I don't understand why we treat water as some kind of special commodity where you get as much as you want for a flat rate.
That's what we had to do to sell it to the residents.
For some reason, we're saying that we're not going to use the market forces. Mm-hmm. I just don't get it.
Well, it goes back to when PI was first introduced, that you can have all you want for $10. We're going to spend all this money as a city to do PI for the whole city. But look, you're going to get $10 and get everything you want. So it's back to selling it to the residents back then. If you would have said, no, we're just going to charge an amount that's similar to what you're paying for your regular water, then residents would say, well, why even get it then? Let's just use our regular water, just run it through the system. So it was a selling point back when we did the PI system.
Yeah, but we reaped the benefits of that for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing that was a poor decision. Mm-hmm. We decided not to let the market control how much water people use. And I'm a believer in the free market. Charge people for what they use. And the only way to do that is to install meters. I don't see any way around it. We're not going to browbeat people or encourage people into lowering their water consumption enough that we get below where we need to be.
But we charge market rates for power, garbage, I mean, everything else. I mean, gets charged based on your usage. And water just hasn't caught up to it.
So, Mr. Crawley, I do share your concern about the finance. And so I don't know if you caught it, but Mrs. Reese had mentioned that we're going to apply for $1 million grant.
Okay.
So we may not get it and we may not use it, but we've talked to staff about doing that.
Is that from the federal government or is that from the... Is there strings attached to that grant? Any restrictions?
You have to use it to build a PI metering system.
And that's it.
And so Mr. Zappala also talked about other options in order to minimize that. So everyone's concerned about that. Okay. Any other questions from down here? Nope. You guys, do you have any more down here?
Okay. I think, do you have some direction or do you need some more?
It would be nice if the council would, in particular to the xeriscaping and consideration to the landscaping, if Chandler, if you could say a few things.
Yeah. We actually have code that allows for xeriscaping, I found. So this is something that we just have never had anybody apply for. So I think it's something that the Planning Commission should visit and check on the incentives. And I think that that's another thing that matters, is as long as there's not an incentive to xeriscape, I don't know how many takers you're going to get. But the xeriscape clause, and it's really short, let me just read it real fast. It says, nothing in this section shall be construed to prohibit the use of drought-tolerant vegetation or xeriscape and non-vegetative materials, provided, however, failure of an owner to install and maintain landscaping within the front yard area under the guise that vegetation and bare ground that occur naturally on the site constitutes xeriscaping shall not qualify as conforming with the provisions of this section. So that's all it is. It's really, really inadequate. And I think that's where we're going is...
Did it say it shall not qualify?
Yeah, so native doesn't count.
Oh. Can't have wheat.
So I think we've seen other cities that have looked at their xeriscaping code, and we feel like this is something that could be fleshed out to possibly entice people to look at this option more in their yards.
And my only preference there is that if we're going to add xeriscaping, which I think we should, it has to be maintained. So I've seen lots of people put in rocks, and then they don't maintain it, and it just the weeds grow up through the rocks. They think somehow rocks are magically going to prevent weeds from growing up, and it doesn't happen, right? The other thing that I would really prefer is that we put some kind of guideline in terms of not having a uniform surface covering the whole yard. So in other words, I don't want somebody to just dump rocks all over the yard and say it's xeriscaping. A complete yard full of just rocks looks really, really awful.
Yeah.
And will lower our property value. So it needs to be done right, where we maybe constrain the xeriscaping to a certain percentage of the yard so that there's some variety in their landscape.
So is this something that council would like to have forwarded to the Planning Commission and have them start working on that?
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's all.
Okay. Thank you.
I think, I mean, you could even have sections in our code with, like we do in our design guidelines, that say, you know, we give examples and pictures and things like that. I think that would, that's how we could update our code with those type of things.
Yeah. I like that.
Anything else? No? Okay. Let's move on. Item number 12. Mr. Bunker, you're going to present on solid waste, green waste, and recycling.
Yes, Mayor and Council, there has been a request to discuss solid waste, green waste, and recycling options of the city. And so I just wanted to, first of all, cover what our current garbage and recycling rates are. Right now, the first garbage can for a resident is $10.92 per month. That's collected on a weekly basis. Any additional garbage can, whether that's the second, third, whatever, is still $10.92 per month, and that's collected, again, weekly. The first recycle can is $4.79, and it's collected biweekly. And then the additional recycle can is only $2.24, again, collected biweekly. Right now, green waste, we do not have an option for that. If you look at those numbers, it's cheaper to have two recycle cans than one extra garbage can. So every resident's required to have one garbage can. There are items that just do not go into the recycle, and every resident is required to have a garbage can. They're not required to have a recycle can, but the city made some changes, I believe it was about a year and a half ago, the second garbage can used to cost less than the first garbage can. We raised those rates, and then we lowered the additional recycle can. You can actually get two recycle cans for less than your second garbage can. I did get some information from Waste Management on Cedar Hills Recycling. In 2014, the city recycled 264 tons of aluminum, cardboard and paper, scrap metals, and plastics. So,
how much?
It was 264 tons. So, 2,833 trees, mature trees, were saved, representing enough timber resources to produce 35 million sheets of newspaper. It also saved 962 cubic yards of landfill airspace, which represents enough airspace to fulfill the municipal waste disposal needs of 1,235 people for 1 year. So it was a lot of space that we saved. It also saved 1,127,531 kilowatt hours of electricity, which is enough power to provide the annual electricity needs of 93 homes. And also, it would have saved 644,000 gallons of water, representing enough fresh water to meet the daily water needs of 21,929 people. So that came from Waste Management based on Cedar Hills Recycling. Now, there's a lot more that can be done. If we saved 264 tons of recycled material, and we really don't have that big of a take rate. In fact, the take rate's not enough. They're coming on a biweekly basis, and we can get with Waste Management and see what it will take for them to come on a weekly basis, because that's one of the comments that we've received is, I would probably recycle if I could get them to come weekly. So that's one of the issues. Green waste is also an issue. We've had the discussions in the past with green waste.
David, can I interject for just a moment there? In terms of a take rate for weekly recycling, is it possible? So if they say, look, here's the difference. If you had this much higher take rate, we'd come out weekly. Is it possible for us to say, okay, give us weekly,
let's assume we have that take rate, and then if we don't, we owe you that fee, but we'll charge it to the people who through your garbage rates. And so we'll just make up that fee by charging a little bit extra for your garbage totes.
Yeah, I think that discussion can be had with waste management for sure. It's there's a cost analysis that waste management does in order to send a truck through the city and collect the product. I mean, it definitely costs them resources, money, to do that. And if the discussion from the city side was, hey, tell us what the tonnage is that we need to produce on a recycle basis in order for you to send your truck weekly, and if we don't hit that number, then we'll make that up financially so that waste management isn't out.
So
that's a possibility to have that discussion, yeah.
If I am understanding that correctly, what you're saying is you would, if we didn't have the take rate, you would then just raise rates for everybody, including those who aren't using recycling services, in order to cover the difference. Which I have to be honest, I struggle with, because that, in my mind, that is government enforcing good behavior. And
that's exactly what we did last time we adjusted rates.
No, because the people who don't have two cans are still just paying $10.92.
Right, but we upped the price of that can.
We upped the price of the second can, not the first can. Okay. So if you didn't increase your garbage or recycling, you still just pay the $10.92, which is the cost, the pass-through cost to come get your garbage can. Now what you're saying is, in this situation, we would give you cost plus simply because you're choosing not to recycle.
And here's how I would justify it. Let's imagine that extra fee is a dollar per household on your bill.
Mm-hmm.
Then what I'm saying is, it only costs you a dollar a month so that we can provide every resident the service of weekly pickup on recycling instead of biweekly. And it's your choice as to whether you want to take advantage of that service or not. But it does take some basic flat rate charge in order to bring the guy out.
I understand, but then you're paying for the people who want to recycle
to
do so.
You could use it, and so you could.
So again, though, you are charging a resident more to allow other people to do something that they don't want to do.
Still
government enforced good behavior.
I'm with you.
But I've got some basic questions. How much does it cost more for each recycle can to be picked up than it does for each regular can to be picked up? Is it more expensive for the recycling to
come? When you say picked up?
For the city, what does it cost the city per can for the recycling cans to be picked up versus for the regular garbage cans to be picked up?
So on the garbage can, in that fee is also the tipping fee. So we pay per weight on those garbage cans.
Is it the same rate for both recyclable materials as it is the other? Which one is more?
It's more for the garbage can, right? Because they're tipping it at the landfill.
Uh-huh.
And so we have to pay that cost per ton to actually put it in the landfill.
So it's actually cheaper.
It's cheaper
for the city to recycle than it is to have regular cans.
Oh, yeah.
So it is justified that we charge less, but how much less? I mean, what's the difference in price?
I don't have that in front of me.
I'd like to know the ton rate for recyclable materials versus for regular materials.
Well, part of that tipping rate is also the transportation, the hauling and everything.
Right.
Once it gets to the landfill, to haul it out and to dispose of it, or if they have to haul it to Arizona or wherever it goes,
right.
I mean, it's far more expensive.
And they use gasoline, right? Energy.
Well, diesel,
to get there.
But yes.
See, the cost cut in a fair market scenario, then cost is very indicative of energy used.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it costs the same to the dump, if it costs the same to us to do either way, that tells me that it's not really saving energy.
It's completely different. I mean, recycling materials don't go in the same location, and they're handled completely differently. So different equipment, different personnel, different facility, I mean, all of that's handled completely separate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, I'd like to know the different rates.
Looking at Waste Management's diversion report for 2014, so we did send 264 tons to the recycle versus to the landfill. So right off the bat, that's that weight, instead of being charged at the landfill, we were not charged for the tipping rate. So as far as sending the vehicle here to pick up garbage, they still have the manpower and the gas, the energy consumption to do that.
Right.
And then they haul it to a recycle facility versus hauling it down to the landfill.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I don't know how we do it, but I feel like we need to do a better have a better method of getting the word out. I mean, the newsletter, I'd say, is probably read by less than 10% of our city. Just from what I talk to my neighbors and things. So, you know, whether it's banners up there, you know, on the roundabouts, you know, maybe we have a recycle month. Honestly, I didn't have a recycle can until a year ago, and I am the only one on my entire street that has a recycle can. And I just think people get in the mode of they've always had three cans or always had two cans, and who cares? But I think if we actually put those blue things on a trailer and drove them through the neighborhood one Saturday and said, you guys don't have one? Here's your chance to do it. Save some money on your bill and help the environment. I just think we've done a pretty crummy job as a city. And, you know, I'm not blaming anybody at all. I'm just saying getting the word out that we do recycle in this city. I don't think any of the neighbors on my street even understand that.
I would agree. And part of it, I think, is cultural. But I wanted to add something about how many residents are reading the newsletter. We talked about, at our retreat, converting this over to an electronic newsletter. And I've been playing this last week. I forgot to mention in my council report. I've been using MailChimp for a different organization that I help for their newsletter. And the really cool thing about MailChimp is when you send out the newsletter electronically, it will track every person who opens it and reads the email, as well as every person who clicks on the link to actually read the newsletter. So we'll actually be able to get some hard data to see whether your 10% is right or not.
I agree with that. I don't think education's been great. Though we did do a video message for residents that we posted, and we talked about the cost savings of doing your second can as recycling. We posted it on Facebook and our YouTube accounts on the website. We put it in the newsletter almost every month. It feels like it's in the newsletter a lot. It's been on our Facebook page. I'm not sure, other than going this electronically, what else we can do to get that information out there.
Thing we could do. We could ask our scout groups to put flyers on people's doors. Just once, but you might
actually
get people to read
that. I think it's a concerted effort over a longer period of time, and maybe it's not every month because then it just gets pushed aside. It's maybe like one week a quarter or something like that. I don't know. One month a year is our recycling month, and we encourage everybody to get a recycled can out there. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think the education is good, but I go back to what Daniel said when we're talking about water, letting market forces work and people paying for what they use, and I am fully on board for that. People should pay for what they use, and if they want to have more recycling, then that's fine. That fee is assessed to those who want to use it. And if you want to pay an extra $10 on each cents per green garbage can for whatever reason, then you can. I mean, leave that up to the option to the residents. I know a while ago we talked about an opt-out program, and I don't think we've ever tried that, which is where when a new resident comes in, you're automatically signed up for both, and then you choose to opt out if you don't want recycling. I know some cities have had success with that. I think Pleasant Grove does that, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that way you choose to opt out if you don't
want
to.
I like that out for new residents because they don't, they automatically get two, and then
explore that with other cities and see what their success has been and what the feedback they've received from residents is. I would prefer to do that than just assess a fee to everybody in the city.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Daniel and I we've lived in Oregon, each of us. I recycled everything there. I separated metal, I separated paper, glass, everything. And I separated in three different bins, and that was life. We don't do it here.
Is there a way to work with another city? So, in other words, if we need a larger footprint so that they have a better take rate overall, can we go to Pleasant Grove or Alpine and say, hey, let's have a joint contract? And then maybe we have enough residents that are recycling overall? Is that
It's difficult
feasible?
Because Alpine is with Ace, Highland is with Allied, and we are with Waste Management. So there's three different groups. And, in fact, in Alpine with Ace, they don't haul to our facility here. They actually haul to another location. And I don't know that they would haul to the same recycle facility either.
And
so,
who does PG use?
I think. Chandler, do you know who picks up your garbage can?
Allied.
Yeah. So we're surrounded by other entities, other groups.
And when are we allowed to renegotiate our contract?
Didn't we just?
It wasn't that long ago.
We just did it. Yeah, not that long ago.
About a year and a half ago. We did it not too long ago.
Yeah, about a year ago, I think. I do admit that as a new recycler, I don't know other members of the council how long they've had them, but you know, like I've been about a year, but it is a little bit confusing as to what week it goes out. I mean, I'm getting old, so I don't remember, you know, if
just
it was
put it out every week.
2 weeks ago or whatever. So, you know, that's all I'm saying. That is a little confusing. It'd be really nice if it went out every week. Yeah.
Can we have them revisit our contract without opening it up to bid? Can we say, hey, what would it take for you to come out?
We can talk to. We can have those discussions with them and bring
and,
that.
And maybe
to
they'll
the
say, you know what, instead of it being $479 for a can, maybe it's $525.
You're fine.
Oh, that might be reasonable. Maybe our residents are willing to pay an extra 50 cents.
Yeah. For those who use it,
to get it every week. If it's, you know, $10, if it doubles, okay, maybe not. But it'd be nice to know that number.
I would think it's in Waste Management's best interest to also help us with the education program. So maybe they have resources that we can utilize to educate residents on recycling, because it benefits them if more people are recycling.
Okay, so my turn. So I'm the one that originally brought this up, because I've been on North Point for a year and a half, almost 2 years now, and this is a topic that we talk about as we're coming, going, during our meetings. I mean, it's a pretty big topic of conversation, because several cities have tried green waste. Some have found that it's pretty cost prohibitive to do it for the residents, and have actually backed out of it. And there's some other issues that go with that, and so this is something I've been thinking about for a year, and I've got an article somewhere that's about half written that I wanted to put in the newsletter describing all of this, and I just haven't got around to it. And then a couple of residents posted comments and started asking questions about this, and so that's when I asked for this to be on the agenda so that we could have a good discussion about it. And so I guess what I would like to find out from the council is, where I sit on North Point, would it be possible to work with staff and maybe come together with a proposal, bring it back to the council, maybe even get some residents involved to get their opinion and kind of a litmus test to see what they think, get some feedback from different residents, different groups, and then maybe over the next couple of months, maybe we have a couple of different discussions about specific points about, do we do weekly pickup? Maybe another discussion is, do we do the opt-in, opt-out? And maybe bring back a few different topics that we could talk about so that we can break them down individually with their associated costs and then discuss the pros and cons.
A resident-driven committee on recycling and green stuff?
That's what I'm wondering. I wonder if that would be a good thing.
No, I like
that's
that.
That's kind of where I was leaning.
Yeah, I've always liked resident-driven committees.
Yeah.
And so I like that.
Just one last thought for me. I'm not sold on the idea that recycling is even a good thing to do, because I think that it has to be supplemented by government to even make it a viable option, and that's because it's not something that really does reduce energy overall, I don't think. I mean, half the time we ship recycled materials to China because they can process it there without any regulations. They can do it in a way that's cheap enough to make it so it's successful. So I'm not convinced that it's not that recycling actually does help the environment. I'm looking at Forbes magazine right now. There's an article called "Can Recycling Be Bad for the Environment?" In many cases, it is. So without government promoting it, like Jenny was mentioning, how we're, you know, charging other customers more than the ones that are recycling just to promote it. You know, I'm not sold on it personally.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I mean, there is one consideration that I look at and we talk about at North Point, is that we only have so much room available to us. And so if we keep throwing as much as we can into the landfill, at some point, I mean, that space is going to be gone, and then North Point's going to come back to the cities and say, hey, guess what? We have to go dig another great big hole somewhere, and we need another $100,000 a year from each city in order to go put in all the facilities and this bond payment to go build a new facility. So, I mean, there are trade-offs. So, I mean, that's something we can discuss and probably we can talk about at a future time.
Okay. Anything else?
So, just to be clear, am I okay to go ahead and work with staff and try to outline what we would like to do and kind of get that process started?
That will be a job for Mr. Bunker and I to come up with a resident-driven committee concept. And you're welcome to sit on that, because you sit on North Point anyways. And so you would be welcome to sit on that. If there's another council member that would like to sit on that committee, then somebody can. Any questions on that? Daniel, that's up here, bailiwick. Are you interested in that?
Yeah, I'm interested in that.
Are you okay with that?
I guess I'm just a little confused. So do you want me to back off and not do anything until you guys figure out what's going on?
What I'm saying is let Mr. Bunker and I talk this through in terms of how we would look. And then if the council wants to set up a resident-driven committee, which I said is a really good idea, then we'll come back and talk more about it in terms of who would be good residents to sit on this committee, what would be their tasks, things like that.
Okay.
Can you forward me that email, Forbes? Thanks.
Give me 1 second. I'm going back to my agenda. Okay, now we are at item number 13. Discussion review for RFPs, RFQs for professional services. So, David, you're presenting. I think we should always review all of the people that provide services to the city. We just need to figure out how and when to do that. So, Mr. Bunker, why don't you start?
Yeah. Mayor and Council, the staff has been requested to bring back some information regarding our professional services contracts, and there are several that are listed there in your packet. Currently, we have Allred Jackson for our financial auditing services, and they began in 2010. We have Mr. Blackburn, who provides our building inspection services, and he began his service in 2012. Civil Science does our general engineering services. Our most recent updated contract with them is 2008. However, they were also the contract engineer prior to 2001. So I don't that has not been put out to bid for quite some time. We also have ETJ Law for our legal counsel, which began in 2010. And then we have Wilkinson Outdoor Maintenance, who does our park maintenance. Their contract began in 2008, but was recently reviewed for an extension. So those are the professional contracts that we have, and most of those contracts, like I say, with exception of Civil Science, have been typically reviewed on a 3 to 5 year window, and staff feels it's a good best management practice to review those periodically to make sure that we're getting the value and that we have an adequate contract. So this is a discussion item, and the staff is seeking some recommendation from the council regarding them.
Can I clarify something, David?
Yes.
So you just read off a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Are those all of the professional service contracts we have, or just the ones that we haven't reviewed in the last 3 to 5 years?
I think that's probably all of our professional services contracts. I can't think of any others that we have.
And it seemed like most of them hadn't been reviewed since 2010 or earlier. Is that right? So it's been 5 years.
Except for Wilkinson.
Except for Wilkinson, which you just already talked about.
Reviewed.
Okay.
And there was an extension provision in their contract to allow for an additional 3 years.
Well, and we did a performance review of Eric Johnson a few months ago. Maybe you weren't there as an executive session. So what, out of all the contracts we have, how do you determine what's a professional services contract and what isn't? Because we have a lot more contracts than this.
Yeah, and so if it's just a service, for instance, waste management, we have a contract with waste management, not considered a professional services contract. That's just a goods and services contract. So on the professional services contract, for instance, Allred Jackson, hey, they're CPAs. They have a qualified license in the state of Utah, registered with the Department of Professional Licensing. That's a professional contract. Waste management is not. They are just a general services contract. We could go to really anyone.
Maybe we need some clarification. Maybe we need some clarification from Mr. Augustus then. And so, do you want all contracts?
No, it's professional contracts.
Just for
that's
professional.
That's the way I worded it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I guess I'm a little torn on this one. I agree it's a good idea to review the contracts. I think we have been doing that as they come up for a renewal. For instance, with Wilkinson's Outdoor Maintenance, Jeff came and presented, and Jeff Mogg, and explained why he felt like we didn't need to RFP, why he felt like Wilkinson's was doing a great job, all the things that they do for the city, et cetera. And so to me, that feedback from staff is extremely valuable because they are the ones who are working with Wilkinson's maintenance and know whether or not they're meeting our needs. I like those reviews because I think it gives us as a council the opportunity to hear from staff on how they think that those vendors are working for us. And of course, I always want to hear before those reviews if there are any concerns that aren't, that, you know, haven't been addressed. I don't love the idea of sending an RFP just to send an RFP because there's always the risk that we have that we're going to have an increase in cost because our vendors are going to come back with an increase in their proposals, or that somebody that we're getting a great service from right now decides not to even RFP, and so that affects our budget as well. I would like to rely heavily on staff, so Charles when it comes to our auditing services, Jeff when it comes to maintenance, because they're the ones who are working with these individuals and they know what and how well they are performing for the city. But I do like the idea of even maybe on an annual basis talking about how is All Red Jackson doing for us? How is waste management performing for us? Not just professional services, but any of our contracts. How are they serving our residents? Are they doing a good job? Are they meeting our needs? Are they addressing concerns? So that way we are always on top of knowing how these outside entities are performing for our residents.
So I'm
concerned as well with what Jenny says, is that we have a risk that our costs could go up. So I really want to be wise with the city's money. That to me is one of the highest priorities I have as a city council member. I know the argument that Councilmember Crawley has raised before is we don't know if we're getting a good deal unless we put it out for an RFP potentially. Maybe somebody comes in lower. There's always, of course, the risk that everybody comes in higher. I guess my question is, if staff feels that we're getting a good deal, can we validate that by going to other cities of similar size and saying, hey, how much do you guys pay for your park maintenance contract? How much do you pay for your legal services contract? That'll know. We can kind of calibrate whether our pricing is correct and avoid that risk of, wow, if we put this out for an RFP, if other cities are paying twice what we're paying, we might have to pay twice that as well. That would let us at least see before we go to RFP.
Well, in my experience, whenever you put something out to the market, you're going to get the best price. It's not, you know, it's not that you stick with the one because you're afraid that you're going to get charged more if you introduce some competition. It's the other way around. And why rely on other cities because we're not willing to do our job and really do our research and get an RFP every few years just to make sure? I mean, suppose someone comes in at half price for the maintenance because they have some improved way of doing things, yet we don't know because we are happy with who we've got. We like the people. And I'm always in favor of keeping the group that's doing the work over getting a new group if things are comparable, if there's not any major problems. But sending out for an RFP every two or three years, I think is just doing our due diligence. I think that relying on another city to say, okay, well, hopefully they sent out for an RFP and now let's compare our cost against them. You know what I mean?
I think it's our due diligence to once in a while.
But if they are at all comparable, you have no choice.
No.
You have to take the lowest bid.
No.
Not for professional services.
So, David, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but with a professional service, we're not required to take the lowest bidder. Professional services gives us the latitude to pick from the most competent people, and that's why we send out the RFQ, is to make sure they have the qualifications to do their job in a professional service. It's not handled the same as a goods and services contract.
That's right.
Professional services, we get to choose which vendor we go with, but just because we send it out to RFP or RFQ also does not mean that we have to change from that professional service. We can still stay with what we've got. We're just sending it out and saying we would like additional proposals, and then if we don't like any of them, we don't have to change. But it gives us the option to look at the pricing, the contracts, the qualifications, and the services that the city's getting. Is that
correct
understanding?
In other words,
correct.
If we send out for
you don't have to
maintenance and Wilkinson says, I'm not going
to
put out a new RFP, I like where I'm at,
And I'm not going to put in a new proposal. We hear from three guys, they're all twice the cost. We can actually say, no, we're going to stay with the contract?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We don't have to choose any of the RFPs?
Mm-hmm. Actually, Wilkinson, probably we would most likely be required to take the low bid if we put his out to bid. But with auditing, building inspection, engineering services, legal,
but let's say
we would not have to take the low
let's
bid.
Let's say Aura Jackson doesn't even bid. Can we just say, well, we're going to keep you anyway, or do we have to take one of the people who actually answered our RFP?
That's up to the city council to decide. If you want, if Allred Jackson doesn't respond and they say, we'll stay status quo, we're not going to put an RFP in, but we'll stay status quo, that's up to the city council to decide if you're going to keep that or not, that current contract.
So let me pose a question. We should do a review of these on a regular basis,
and we can determine what a regular basis is. But is the council wanting to create by statute a requirement that an RFP or an RFQ is sent out mandatorily, even if staff says that they're happy?
I don't think we're doing it by statute at all.
I definitely don't want to.
So you don't want to make something by statute then?
No, that's not what we're trying to do.
Okay.
I don't think we've ever said that.
So clarify me, what it is that you're wanting to do?
To go out and make sure that we're getting the most competent professional services for the best value for our residents.
Right. So what does that policy look like? Is it an ordinance that that requires it?
No, just a request to send out
suggestions.
Well, not a suggestion. It was that we were going to give staff direction to go out and check these services. There was no requirement that it has to be done every 3 years or 5 years or anything. It's just, at this time, I thought it was to the benefit of our city.
So looking at this, it's been 5 years for Ari Jackson. It's been 3 years, or, you know, maybe 4.5 and 2.5 and 6.5 years on civil science, and 4.5 years on ETJ law, and 6 years on Wilkinson, 7 years on Wilkinson Outdoor since we've done an RFP or RFQ. I think that it's been long enough that we really should just do it for all of them, for all these that are listed.
Okay. Again, my feeling goes back to, I agree with Daniel. The great thing about working from the city government perspective is we have a lot of insight into what other cities are doing by looking at their budget. We can go see, I mean, I pulled up the budgets for three cities and found out what their legal expenses were. So we can see what surrounding cities are paying for their legal, for their maintenance, for their civil, you know, for their engineering. That's a great benefit to us. We don't necessarily have to RFP to find out what the going rate is for things. We can look around at other cities and see what they're paying. And again, my preference is that to rely heavily on staff when they are the ones. Jeff's working with Wilkinson's maintenance more than we are, and we don't work with them at all, and so he knows what kind of service they're providing to our residents. And so when he came to our council meeting and said, I don't see a need to RFP because they're doing this, and this, and they go above and beyond here, and they're doing a great job here, that holds a lot of water with me, and I think, okay, I trust Jeff. He knows what he's talking about. He knows what we need. Let's go ahead and extend that contract. They seem to be doing very well. He doesn't have any issues. And so I would prefer that we rely more heavily on staff to make those recommendations and say, this person's doing great for us. This one we're having some struggles with. This one we think it's time to RFP, because they're the ones working with those vendors, instead of just doing this blanket RFP on all of our professional services just to make sure that they're, you know, that someone else might not have a better deal. They may have a better deal. The whole reason why we're not required to go with a low bidder is because we do get to go with the person that we feel is most qualified. And again, I feel like our staff knows better because they work with them on a day-to-day basis who those qualified vendors are.
I would agree with that. And so is a review unacceptable? I mean, because even though these relationships started, some of them in 2010, Mr. Crawley, that doesn't mean that they haven't been reviewed. That just means that they haven't gone out for RFP or RFQ.
I just think it's something that should be expected, that we go out for RFP or RFQ once in a while, and I don't feel like I'm doing my job if I don't do that. Now, will I listen to the, you know, suppose we get four RFPs back for Wilkinson for the park maintenance? Certainly one of the criteria I will use in who I'm going to vote for going through with the contract in is what Jeff feels about Wilkinson Outdoor Maintenance. If
let's say that all the costs are comparable. Let's say that Wilkinson's even a slightly more, and Jeff says, I really like working with them, I'd still choose Wilkinson Outdoor.
So the strange thing about that to me then is, like, if we know Jeff says, I like Wilkinson, I want to stay with Wilkinson, I don't even want to RFP, and that holds a lot of water with us, and so then we get four RFPs and we say, well, we're going to take Jeff's recommendation and stay with Wilkinson, we just wasted a tremendous amount of time and money on our side and for all those people who are RFPing. If we're just going to do what our staff's recommending that we do, why don't we just go with what our staff's recommending?
But what if someone comes in with a $50,000 bid when they're charging us $113,000 by memory? I don't know if that's exactly right, right? But what if someone comes in with a $50,000 bid? I would have to say, I really respect the fact that we like working with them, but to save the city $50,000 on and have more money for the different things that the city residents really want, it'd be worth a try.
And I think that's where staff has a pulse on it better than we do. And a great example is Shara with the financial software that we just talked about. He went out and did some research and found out that this financial software offered a better deal and was going to give us X, Y, and Z. And then our current vendor came back and said, we'll match that and make it better. I would expect that the rest of the staff will do the same. I mean, Jeff works in this industry, and so he would know if he's talking to other public works vendors, if they're directors, and if they are saying, look, we just got a great deal with ABC maintenance company, maybe we need to take a look at that. Again, the people that we're hiring are the ones who are working with Allred Jackson and Wilkinson's and Civil Science, and knowing what they're doing, they know what other cities are doing. And so I would prefer to take that recommendation on a case-by-case basis from our staff.
Yeah, but we also don't want to put staff in an awkward position because they do have to work with these people on a daily basis. So, I mean, we've got to be careful that we don't have staff come in and say, hey, we want to know, what do you really think of these guys? Do you really like them or do you really hate them? Because that could put them in an awkward position in front of our city where the council, I mean, we kind of have that job. We signed up to do that. We're the ones that have to make that call. Where staff, I mean, we need to be able to balance that.
But staff doesn't have to do that publicly. There's no requirement for them to do that publicly. Jeff could send us, an email and say, I'm having a really hard time with this vendor. I've called him this number of times or not, you know, and then Davids comes to the council and says, hey, we've got a problem with this professional service contract we need to address. We've never required one of our staff members to come complain about anything in the city.
Right, and I'm just saying we continue with that. I just want to make sure that we're not putting staff in a position like that.
I would never think that they would be required to come to a public meeting and do that. I think that can always be done behind the scenes and through David.
So I'm really uncomfortable with saying we're going to make a blanket policy. We're going to always request an RFP. We're going to always do it after 2-3 years. What my suggestion would be is that we just look at each of these individually. Let's go through them one by one. We'll schedule them for the next few city council meetings we have and say, all right, let's go and we'll review auditing. Let's review inspections. We'll get input from staff. Staff will tell us how good of a job that person is doing with that contract. They can make a recommendation and tell us, we think you should RFP or we think you should not. And then we can have a discussion on that particular service where it makes a lot more sense instead of a blanket policy. And then we can decide, do we want to RFP or not? We can go against or with staff recommendations.
So, David,
So what you're saying is a review.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, David, what kind of time is involved sending out an RFP, RFQ, the time to get it back, compile it, or whatever you need to do? Like, what time, what cost is involved? Can you give us a better idea of what's involved for each one of those?
Well, we thought the city council had asked us to prepare those already.
Which we did.
So they're in your packet.
Yeah.
So we have the sample RFQs, RFPs in your packet. So they're ready. Staff took the time to prep those. It depends on what the council wants to do, what approach you want to take. And
but are we talking like 20 or 30 hours per each one? Are we talking an hour for each one?
Well, they're ready to go, pending what the council wants to do. And I think an appropriate time frame for people to respond would be at least 30 days. And the applicants that would submit on those proposals would be evaluated and brought back to the city council. And then you guys could look at those and decide if you want to make a change, if you don't want to make a change. There's not a lot of time from our standpoint, from staff standpoint here, because the RFQs are ready.
Right.
But you have to review every single one that comes in, and that's going to depend on how many actually come in.
How many typically come in for services like this?
Usually it's just a handful, five or six maybe, on each.
On each
probably
one.
On each one. Building services, our thoughts are there's going to be a few. You know, there might be a couple. There's just not a lot of companies that provide that service. So...
So I'm really enjoying this conversation. I think this type of debate is healthy, and I like that. And so I'm trying to clarify something, though. So let's talk about Wilkinson for a second. So do you guys want to send out for RFP or RFQ Wilkinson Outdoor Maintenance, even though we just extended their contract?
If I'm going to weigh in on that one, I say no. We just extended it. Why? Okay. That's a waste of time. And I don't think you prepared one for Wilkinson for that, did you?
That's there. So my
no, it's listed there, but it's no. They didn't do an RFP for that. And
they didn't. It was just a review that we do periodically. So.
No, but in our agenda packet, I don't think that's list. There's not an RFQ for
that's
that.
I think that's my point.
Right.
Is it?
I know. David listed it as the list, but since we just reviewed it, that doesn't make any sense. So my opinion is, if I'm going to weigh, I'll weigh in on this one, and I would say the other four. And if you think it's going to take, I would say let's pick off the oldest two for next month, and then the next two for the next month.
Okay.
Yeah, so we don't overwhelm our staff, and I think that's prudent.
Mr. Crowley, what do you think about
that? Is that going to make the ones that you've already prepared stale? Is there going to be a lot more work if we wait to send those out? Or would waiting a month?
So I guess in conjunction with that, does it make a difference on staff's time and their abilities if we send out four at one time or if we do two and two?
I don't think it matters. They could all go out at the same time. You can do two and two if you would like. One at a time if you would like. None if you would like.
It is going to take council time.
Wait. If you don't mind, I'm not clear yet in terms of how we treat Mr. Wilkinson. And so I know how Mike feels. Mr. Crowley, I'd like to know how you feel about Mr. Wilkinson. Do we send that out for RFP, RFQ, even though we just extended him a 3-year contract a month ago?
Are we bound by that three? I assume if we sign something that says we're going to use them for 3 years, is there a penalty if we back out? Or is it just we're going against what we signed? I think if we signed a 3-year contract, then maybe it'd be hard to say we're going to back out of that. So did we actually sign a contract that we can't back out of?
Well, the contract that we signed allowed... His contract's a little different than the others because okay. He had a... I think his original contract was a 4-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
With 2 3-year extensions possible.
Okay.
At the end of that, we go out to RFQ, RFP regardless.
Right.
Because our contract only allowed for those two extensions.
So we just did an extension this year.
We just did. And we did the second extension.
And we actually signed something saying we were extending their contract. Is that right?
We prepared that, yeah.
Okay.
Based on the
council's
motion.
Well, I don't know that we can even do that if we decide to. It doesn't seem to make sense that we'd go against something that we signed in writing. That's
well, we could.
Quite right.
Because it's got a 30-day no-fault out.
Yeah.
Okay, we could because of the no-fault out.
So do you want to go out for RFP and RFQ for Mr. Wilkinson?
I'm torn on that one because it has been so long since we've sent one out.
So is that a yes?
I'm torn.
Trent, how do you feel?
I would say since we just approved it and we actually did review his contract in detail with him here, I would say at this point I wouldn't.
Okay.
But I would do it next year. If we have a 30-day out, I would say let's do it next year.
Okay. How do you guys feel?
I would say it doesn't make sense to RFP, but I would also say we have to treat these all the same. And if we're going to be okay just doing an annual review with Wilkinson and taking staff recommendation and renewing that way, then we should handle all of our professional services contract that way and not make a special exception for one vendor. So my preference, again, is that we review each one individually, that we talk to the staff member that works with that person to see how they feel that vendor's performing, and then determine at that point whether we need to RFP or not.
Daniel?
I do not want to do a request for maintenance.
For Mr. Wilkinson.
That's right.
Okay, I agree. So now I've got another question. So he went through a review, but not an RFP, RFQ. So did Mr. Johnson went through a review, but not an RFP, RFQ. So what do you want to do with Mr. Johnson? In light of the fact you just said that you're conflicted, and so you wouldn't do it now, but you do it a year from now.
Did we actually sign an agreement saying...
Jenny says there's a 30-day out.
No, I'm talking about with Mr. Johnson. You're asking about Mr. Johnson.
Yeah.
With his company. Have we signed an agreement this year that extends his contract?
We just extended it.
it didn't have an expiration date.
We just decided not to send it out for RFP, RFQ. We reviewed it in exec session, mm-hmm. and the council unanimously said to not send it out for RFP, RFQ.
On all four of the others, I would send it out. On all four of the others besides Wilkinson, and then I would send it out.
Okay. Mike?
I would say on all the other four, I would go out for RFQ.
Trent?
And I'll send all four out.
And Jenny? Daniel?
I disagree. Like I said, I would do it on a case-by-case basis with staff input. I would like to hear staff input on all these other four before we just send them out to RFQ. I have no idea how Shara feels about Alred Jackson. I have no idea how our team feels about civil science. I have no idea how our staff feels about Eric Johnson. I would like to talk to our staff that worked with these individuals before we just send out an RFP.
Daniel?
Same as Jenny.
Yeah. I don't know how you in good conscience can talk about not sending Mr. Wilkinson out for RFP, RFQ, and then say you want to do that for Mr. Johnson.
Hold on.
I'm not done yet.
It's not just Mr. Johnson. It's all four of them.
We're not singling
anybody out.
Well, but they weren't reviewed and he was.
Yeah.
Then that's fine. I'll send all five of them out.
I'd say all four or all five, but if my choices are all, only two or three, or anyway, yeah, all four or all five.
My only question was, I'm trying to remember the executive session, but I didn't think we had a discussion of whether he should go out for RFQ at that point. I think we talked about it, but I don't think we took a vote if we should or not.
We talked about it, and the council unanimously said to not go out for RFP.
No, it was for him to just continue to RFP.
We had a resident ask us to submit an RFP for legal services and indicated that he was interested in answering the RFP. So we went to executive session to review Eric. We reviewed his performance, and then the council decided at that point to tell that resident that we were not going to RFP at the time, that we felt it made sense to keep him on.
I will add something to this too. When we had Wilkinson here, it was open in public meeting where we were able to discuss all the pros and cons, whereas we haven't had that for Mr. Johnson, so that's another thing that's a little bit different. I'm surprised we're even talking about what went on in executive session personally, but I think that it is different. We're not comparing apples to apples there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think we are comparing apples to apples, to be honest with you.
They're all professional service contracts.
Yeah. So I don't know how you do one and not do the other. So if you're intent on sending out an RFP, RFQ for Mr. Johnson, then you should do it for Mr. Wilkinson. Otherwise, you're not being consistent.
I view that completely different. Outdoor park maintenance is not a professional service.
Well, then you disagree with Mr. Bunker on that, because he put all this.
It's listed here as professional services.
Well, I mean, it's semantics also, there, but
He also said the contract was not a professional services contract.
Yeah, he did say that.
Then why is it listed on our agenda as a professional services contract?
Good question.
I mean, I do not consider a maintenance company a professional service.
He also said that we'd be required to accept the lowest bid on that one possibly, whereas the other ones, they wouldn't. So that one is clearly different than the others. But anyway,
okay,
so I'm stuck with four. I say we send out four. I'm sticking with four, I should say.
And this is not an action item, guys. It's just advice.
I mean,
a direction. And so
let me see if I can summarize our direction and direction to staff, I guess you could say. So I would say let's go ahead and send the four professional services, which would be Allred Jackson, Blackburn Civil Science, ETG Law, for their services. Send those out to RFP, RFQ within the next week, and then give 30 days for those respondents to respond back to our city.
I second that motion.
It's not a motion.
Well, it's not a motion. It's just direction. So
I second
we
that
just
direction.
Have to have three of us right. in.
I think that I understood your what your position was. I just strongly disagree with it. I don't know how you send something out for ETJ Law and not send it out for Wilkinson.
And that's fine. I mean, we can disagree on
we
that.
Can.
So that's fine. Mm-hmm. So I believe we have three council members that want to send out the four professional services.
You do.
And there's kind of a. I don't know whether the park maintenance is really a professional service or not, so let's set that one aside for now because we just approved that. We're not even sure it is a professional service at this point unless you have other ideas.
We'll make sure.
Okay.
And doesn't mean we'll change services.
Right, yeah.
I'm not saying this is going to mean we're going to change services. I think this is just prudent in seeing where we are with these. I mean, hey, I know Civil Science personally, but there could be some other people that will give us a better deal.
I just like to be consistent.
I will say I'm disappointed that we're not even talking to staff first. But
yeah,
we're talking to David.
That I would like to speak to Sharo because he's the one who deals with the auditor.
David, we don't direct Sharo.
Yes.
But Jeff came and talked to us about Wilkinson's.
About a contract specifically.
Right. And he gave us
feedback on that. To talk to us about his.
When the RFPs and the RFQs come back,
that department head would come with it.
I would have loved to hear that feedback from those department heads before we even decided to submit the RFP.
But we don't have a department head for legal services.
No, but David could be that one, but we do have for everything else.
I sense that there's a lot of resistance to going out to RFP, RFQ, and I don't know why.
I'll be honest, I feel like Eric Johnson's being specifically targeted. We just did a review. Everybody was fine with him, and I do feel that in this particular instance that there is a sense to find new legal counsel. So I do think in some ways this is personal, especially the time that it's come up. But again, my biggest concern is that I think we should be looking at this on a case-by-case basis and actually talking to staff. We've done that with every other contract. We have talked to our staff first and gotten their feedback instead of just making this blanket policy of, well, we're just going to send an RFP out every 5 years.
Well, we're not making a decision saying that we're sending these out every 5 years.
But you're saying that that's why you want to do it is because it's been 5 years. There's no other reason other than it's been 5 years.
Yeah, but there's another one on there that's only been 3 years.
Right, but my point is that's the only reason I'm hearing it's, well, it's just because we haven't done it in a long time. It's not because we feel like we're getting bad service,
and
it's not because we feel like we're going to get a better deal. It's strictly based upon we haven't done it in a long time.
So, Mr. Crowley, I don't think that there's any hesitation about an RFP or RFQ. Mm-hmm. I just think it's inconsistent that you send one out to ETJ Law and you don't send it out to Mr. Wilkinson. That was my point.
I don't like signing a contract and then changing it within a month. I really don't like doing that. In business,
yeah.
I don't like doing that. And but
are you
but at the same time, I feel like we should review contracts as much as possible.
I agree.
I mean, some of these were signed 6 years ago. How do I know if they're the right group to be with?
I said we should review it and regularly. Mm-hmm. And so all I'm saying is that, are you really saying that the process that we went through reviewing Wilkinson and ETJ Law was that different?
I think it was.
I think it was too.
One of them was in closed door session. One of them was
that's
out here
he's,
openly.
A quasi employee, if you will,
appointee.
And so it should be handled in exec session.
Okay. I don't know that you could call him a quasi employee either.
Call him whatever you want. You know,
he is considered a political appointee appointed by
right.
the city council,
yeah.
who will serve until the city council removes him. So
exactly.
There's no end date on his contract.
So we have.
I'm saying there isn't
an end date on him. I think Eric could probably continue as our legal counsel for the next 10 years. I just think it's prudent to see what other competent, and I think the term is competent for sure, but it has to be understood by all. as part of what his fee is and what he will continue to charge or whatever. Let me just clarify one thing. But didn't Rob vote against Wilkinson? I believe he did.
I think so. Yeah. I can't remember, mm-hmm. but if I did, it would be because we didn't have other competing bids that I could compare against. I can't remember.
I just think Rob should be consistent. So, Mayor, I think he voted against that contract.
Oh, I'm pretty sure he did.
So he's being consistent.
So apparently we're not being
You're
consistent.
Not being.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
We don't have to be consistent on everything.
And so if Mr. Johnson is a political appointee, which he is, does that mean we also have political appointees? Do we put them out for RFP and RFQ?
Well, we don't have contracts with them like we do for legal services.
Mr. Bunker has a contract.
Right.
He's a political appointee.
Mm-hmm.
He's an employee, which is a political appointee.
But we're not sending out RFPs and RFQs for political appointees.
It's a W-2 versus a 1099.
Yeah.
But our city ordinances don't differentiate that way, Rob.
Okay. I think we all know what's going on here. So, I think it's hypocritical and unfortunate.
I resent that remark because you know what? The city council has the authority, the duty, and the charge to review things like this when we see prudent.
Sure. And I clearly said, I think you're being inconsistent and hypocritical.
And I don't think we are.
Oh, that's fine. You don't have to call me out. You're used to disagreeing with me on a regular basis.
I totally don't care. I'm just saying you don't have to call us out like that in a public meeting and say that we're being hypocritical.
I think we're being prudent.
Okay. Be that as it may. Okay. I think that we've belabored this enough. So you have your marching directions, Mr. Bunker.
Mayor, can I just say one more thing?
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify. I'm on a losing side of this argument, so I'm not trying to change anybody's opinion. But Councilmember Crowley made a statement that he doesn't understand why anybody would be against it, and so I just wanted to clarify my position because I want him to understand where I'm coming from. I think that helps us work better as a council if we can understand where we're coming from. So I want to explain to you that I'm not opposing putting this out to bid because of some economic reason. What I'm opposing is the process we're going through. My preference is that we start with a formal review of a contract, that the process starts with going to staff and saying, staff, can you please review this contract? Gather some data. What are other cities paying? Talk to your service provider amongst your staff and say, how is this service provider working for us? Then they would come with all that data and make a recommendation and say, we like this person, we want to keep it going, or we like this person, but we'd like to put it out for a bid to see if we can do better, or we really don't like this person, we really recommend we do a bid. And I want that staff recommendation, and then I may choose to put it out for a bid regardless. I may follow your principle that it's always good to put out a bid every couple years to see where it's at.
I think so.
I just think that comes as a third step in the process, not the first. And so that's where my objection is coming from.
I totally agree.
I just want you to know. I'm with you.
I think going to RFP or RFQ should not be such an emotional process. It should be every 2 years, I think.
And I would probably not agree with you.
I'm just not making enemies in the process. You know what I mean? You're not saying we don't like you or we do like you. That's why I'm just saying we should blanket do it, because I don't want us to say, we're not so happy with this group, or we're more happy with this group. Let's send them out for proposal.
Yeah, I just want the review first. And in the case of Mr. Johnson, we just did the review, and we were all happy.
Right.
So I would have expected that we wait another 2 years before we bring it up again.
In the future, I think I'm going to propose that we review all professional contracts every 2 years. That way, every council gets a chance to approve who they're working with.
Why in the future? Why not now?
Just because I didn't know it was going to be this much of an emotional issue, this thing.
Right.
And to make it unemotional, I think we ought to have a policy in the future. So I will propose that sometime that we have.
But why not now?
Because that's not what was on the agenda to make that policy.
We're not voting on anything, but.
Right. I'm not going to propose something that we can't really ratify because it wasn't on the agenda, which is going to every two years.
But what you're saying is that you think there should be a process.
I do.
And Daniel has said the process should have sequence.
Mm-hmm.
The last sequence should be RFP, RFQ. You agreed with that.
I think the first step should be RFP, RFQ.
Every 2 years.
That's different.
You send
than
it
the
out.
But
the first step is that, and then we review and decide which is the best step.
Okay.
If it's the last step, then it's an emotional process because we only send it out for the ones we're not happy.
I don't agree with that.
So I think it should be the first step.
So you're kind of reversing a little bit. You're saying it shouldn't be a process. You think we should just do it?
It should be a process. Every 2 years, it goes to
okay.
RFP.
But there
it's unemotional.
But there shouldn't be any review leading up to that.
The review should be that process. That's part of the review process. You get the group that's been with you pleading their case, staff explaining which one they want.
I guess that we're just saying review is different than our RFP, RFQ, just mandatorily sending out, is that review would entail finding out how staff feels and then going to the final step of RFP, RFQ, if staff is unhappy and recommending that.
Or if the council just wants to.
Yeah, or if the council just wants
to. Bob just made a statement which indicated you misunderstood my position again. You made the statement that we're only going to send it out for RFP if we're emotional or we're unhappy, and that's not what I said.
I
gave three cases, and I said we can send it out for RFQ regardless of staff recommendation, even if we just felt like we wanted to do it.
I felt like I was agreeing with you, not disagreeing.
It just comes at a later step in the process.
No, I felt like I was agreeing with you, not disagreeing. I just think it should be a process every 2 years, but it's been so long. I'm saying let's do it all now.
So I wanted to say just thank you to Councilmember Zapala for giving you a better explanation of why you were saying what you were. So that helps me understand your position a little bit better. I don't know that I necessarily agree with it, but I appreciate that you gave us that explanation. The reason I don't know that I necessarily agree with that is... Sorry, I completely lost my train of thought. Hold on a second. I got headed down a road and got a detour.
You led into it really well, though.
I am the old guy, all right?
Yes, apparently I'm getting there rather quickly. Would you please just refresh my memory?
Yes, really quickly. My preference is that we start off gathering information. We go talk to other cities.
That's where it was. Okay, thank you.
There you go.
So the reason I think I disagree with that just a little bit is because each city has unique things that factor into how they're run. Legal services may be different. They may have different lawsuits. I mean, there's a whole multitude of things that are different for each city. So to go to a city of a similar size, I mean, that might approximate what we do, but there's a lot of other factors that we wouldn't know behind the scenes that may be different for our city than theirs. So why, I mean, that may be kind of quasi-okay way to look at it. I don't know that that would be necessarily a determining factor for how I would vote on whether that was right or not.
I just like data.
Yeah. And I'm just saying I don't know how much I would trust that data because of other factors that could affect another city that we would have no idea about.
If we did it for enough cities, that all averages out. At least would give us some sense of the market.
The most important data we can get is what someone else is willing to do it for us.
Yeah.
I like data too.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important piece of information.
But I may not want to do that if staff says there's a risk that we might lose this provider that we really like.
Right.
I don't like doing things
that's
scared, being scared. Yeah.
Okay. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I will motion to adjourn.
I second that motion heartily.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?